This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man Can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck? Was that his
Lizmark.
Name? Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our favorite. Opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome to a very special episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your host, Justin Zerk, and we will be live here on this Friday evening of NBA All-Star Weekend. And Scott Criscola, in many ways, is very fitting that we are talking tonight, I think on many levels. One, for a reason we'll talk about in a moment. But two, we've talked in-depth before about our kind of ties to President's Day weekend and the NBA All-Star Weekend and... the adventures we've had on these weekends in years past.
Yep, absolutely. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 395 of The Mothership. We're getting close. This is 2 years. It was 2004 and 2005. You and I were locked in the... it wasn't the big steel box. It was the big warehouse-looking building that was our building that I'm still at. Let's see, the 1 year it was in L.A., 2004, and then I think 2005 it was in Denver. I remember getting some ugly Nuggets looking swag a couple months later. And then 1 year was like 2 feet of snow, and I think we watched WrestleMania 6, if I remember correctly, before we went in. I believe it was. So yeah, we had some fun President's Day weekends, and of course this weekend's All-Star Game is in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Great article by the way on ESPN tonight, today, Paul Lucas, the UniWatch guy, did the anthology, or I guess the evolution of NBA All-Star jerseys. How they used to go, like, the theme of the who's hosting, and then they used to kind of be generic, and then they used to have those butt-ugly ones in the 90s, and then kind of got back, and so it's pretty interesting, pretty interesting. But yes, All-Star Weekend, very historic for you and I.
Always a fan of All-Star Weekend as a kid growing up. That was always, I was, like, locked in. I would refuse to go anywhere on those nights to watch a three-point dunk, and looking at the way tomorrow night's shaping up here in the Northeast, where it's like going to be like negative 30 out overnight, so I'll probably be bundled up watching it once again, as always. But yes, we are here tonight recording, one, due to scheduling conflicts, we're recording a little bit early, but two, it worked out beautifully because yesterday marked the five-year anniversary, our fifth birthday of the debut of the Place to Be podcast, Scott, and it's been quite the run.
Absolutely.
You know, I thought maybe we'd be on episode 700 by now, but we had to slow our pace a little bit.
Yes.
But amazing enough. So let me ask you straight up. When we started on February 11th, 2011, did you imagine that we'd be sitting here on February 12th, 2016, being a major part of a website, still going with this show, hosting other shows, and being near 400 episodes of this? Like, I mean, did you really think we'd go this long?
I thought we would probably have the show going. I knew that, you know, you were going to have a family and have at least one kid, and of course you have two beautiful, beautiful children, and you knew the pace was going to slow down a little bit. But like a website and multiple podcasts and, you know, networking with another entire group of no, not at all. Absolutely not. I always knew we were going to do vaults because we did them written. And you would always you and I talked about for a few years about recording our reviews is pretty much what it is. And I mean, some of our early ones are just dreck, both written and podcast. But I feel like we've done a great job of evolving them to what they are now, which I think in terms of WWE vintage vaults, I don't reviewing WWE shows. I think we're second to none, and I'll go to the grave saying that. And, you know, what we've had in the last just in the last couple of years since WrestleMania 29, we met so many new people and built the website and everything. That stuff I never thought we'd have.
Right.
Never. Because it seemed like when you and I first talked about it, it seemed just such a daunting task to build a website and get people to write.
It was a daunting task to get you to commit to give up on your antiquated internet radio and just bite the bullet and go to podcast form. Like, that was the first battle to say, Scott, look, it's hard to listen to your show at Tuesday at 11 o'clock. What if we just... you know, put it into an archive and anyone can listen anytime they want. And we were lucky because we had a built-in fan base that was part of our message board, you know, back in the day where we used to post our reviews, but also a built-in fan base and friends from a blog that we frequented, and that was the Blog of Doom, the CWO. It, you know, split off back of Scott Keats' old Blog of Doom. This is all internet wrestling history that makes many eyes glaze over, but it was a big part of our history because it brought with it a whole group of friends, and now basically the staff of Place to Be Nation, the majority of it anyway, was founded on the you know, foundation of that friendship that were built in the early aughts. And you know, a lot of those people came over and were our earliest listeners of the show, and we worked hard to include them. And one of our goals when we started to grow the show was we're gonna bring in guests, we're gonna have various people on, and we're going to make our listeners and fans part of the show. Like, that was a, that was something we, you know, said we wanted to do. And I thought we did a great job of that. And I think it's what made, helped make us so successful. So I'm saying this in a way to say thank you to all our listeners that did participate early on, that took the time to always give feedback and come on the show and contribute one way or the other to build up that fan base and the popularity to get to where we got today. So, but before we go any further talking about the show, I want to bring in, we actually have two guests with us tonight. And there's a reason we picked these two guys, because they are two of our oldest Place to Be podcast guests, two of our oldest members, you know, Peak TVN originals when we launched the website. These guys were both guests very early on, especially the first person we're going to bring in here, and that is the host of Rank and File. You hear him on Main Event and occasionally writing at PlaceToBeNation.com. This is Jordan Duncan. Jordan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Wow,
though.
Twice in a week, JD. It's an honor and a privilege.
Yeah. Rank. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Fellas, I am not wearing my say hello to my little friend Gnome t-shirt that I won from, I believe, episode 100, correct? I still have it. I'm just not wearing it tonight.
You did win that for episode 100, and you also one of our oldest guests. I think technically our oldest guest was Matt Rotella, and we did not want him chomping his way through this episode. So, I mean, he was on with us for a couple of the early vaults, actually. And then Leanne Griffin, another early guest, and we just didn't think she'd be interested in coming on talking vintage vault with us. Derek LaRue has gone missing, so we're not, you know, we're not too sure where he's at.
That's actually my doing. I planned this all out.
It was me all along.
But Jordan, you made your first debut in episode 14. It was called Kicking It Old School. You and Andrew Reich came on to talk 90s sports. We talked Fab Five, old NCAA tournaments. We talked NBA, and I'm sure we talked All-Star Week. Again, I'm positive of it. We talked WrestleMania moments. So that was your first episode. It was episode 14, and here you are today, somehow still going with us. We haven't run you off yet.
Somehow still going in life.
Yes, well, true that. True that. So also with us is another good friend of ours who's been around since the old CWO days, been with PlaceToBeNation.com since that launched, and he was a big part of episode 50 of the Place to Be podcast. He came on and he had won a contest, I believe, to tell – was it Todd Weber, first of all, come in. Welcome. How are you?
Greetings and salutations and happy birthday, boys.
Thank
5 years.
Thank you, T-Web.
Goodness gracious.
So, Todd, what was the contest that you won in episode 50?
I think I was just recognizing what the funniest, pointing out what the funniest moment of the podcast to date was, I think.
I think you're right.
And then you let me have an acceptance speech, I believe.
Yes, and that saved episode saved episode 50.
Was the funniest moment at that point my effort against Todd in the trivia tournament? Because that was pretty comical.
I don't think we had the tournament yet. Todd, do you remember what the winning moment was? I don't even remember.
I believe I was talking about Matt Rotella himself. Yeah. It was a Rotella callback. So
that's kind of a layup.
Oh, you know, yeah, it might have been. Was that when he went on the? Actually, I think it was that very. I think episode 50 was when we had him on too with the Titanic music and all that stuff. I think that was that. Episode 50, very memorable. Also, big movie with Joe Stone. So it was a very memorable episode. Episode 50, but.
Oh my God!
So anyway, wow. So glad to have Todd and JD with us, and we will be getting to our Vintage Vault in a few minutes. But we wanted to take just a few moments again to kind of talk about the evolution of the show, and we'll celebrate more at episode 400, Scott, that's coming up, soon enough. We'll be doing our usual retrospective, and with these being so close together, we didn't want to, we didn't want to do a double up. So we thought it was just good to have a couple guests on, still do a vault here. And then 400 be our full celebration. Plus, Christmas is still very fresh in our minds as far as absurdity. Yeah. So I didn't think we needed to, need to squeeze three of those in. And we do a lot of these retrospectives. But what's kind of your thoughts over the last year? Since whatever last February, because a lot's changed in that time for us as a show.
One of us or Scott.
Well, obviously I'll go first. Well, we've pretty much stuck to vaults unless we have a very special thing. Did we do a special episode? Was it Warrior? No. Well, we did a special one 2 years ago.
Right.
2014 when Ultimate Warrior passed away. Did we do one this year? Did somebody pass away? I don't think so. We didn't do. Did we do Dusty? I don't think we did a Dusty one, did we?
Just main event. I don't.
There's a main event.
Yeah, main event. We did it.
Main event. We were able to do some of that. And Kevin.
The lines get blurred.
Yeah. The night the line was crossed. We didn't do a Piper one. I know, but I mean, we've had so many great shows added on. Of course, you and Will with the Dangerous Alliance, and the continuing great main event, and the shows we've added PWO Between the Sheets and Titans and such. And of course, Jordan's show, Rank and File. So it's been nice to see. I think the thing that I've enjoyed the most in the last year, even 2 years, is seeing people feel comfortable to be able to start their own podcast. That, mm-hmm. Well, these two guys are normal Joes and normal wrestling fans, and they're really good at it. Sounds great. And I think I have the confidence to do it myself. And, Jordan came out of anonymity and sucked at first. And now he's just plain mediocre. So,
he brings his hatred from written word to podcast form.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, listen, that's why I have people on my show all the time, because I know I still suck at it. So.
But, we miss Dunkin' Donuts.
But, it's been amazing how things have exploded and how we've had such a network just from you and I, in essence, for... and as we'll talk about when we get to episode 400, we've had some we had some daunting moments from 1 through 50. Mm. I'm surprised you had a myriad of choices, T-Web. Funniest moment, because there were quite a few of them, intentional and unintentional. But
we've come a long way, too, just even on the production side of it. I mean, relying on Derek to put together the opens for us and playing them off the phone, before we really pieced together how to best edit these. I mean, there was a time where we would actually – we never edited, I think, the first 100. I didn't even know how. We just would record it and then convert it and post it. That's it. Everything was on the fly. We never went back and put anything in. So, I mean, that was it for the first 100 or so.
Yeah, we didn't have mics. I mean, you used to talk into your laptop, and I had the headset and, these Yeti mics. I mean, it's amazing if you listen, even in the mid 150s. Mm. When did you get your... I'm trying to remember when you got. Actually, I do remember when you got your mic, and I do remember the first vault I believe we had with your new mic, and that was Royal Rumble 1995. Because if you remember, we had seven parts because the audio kept cutting in and out. And then I got and then you got me my mic a couple years ago, actually. And that's the key thing, because now the music sounds crisper, mm-hmm. and just everything sounds better. You know, we have a, you know, and obviously we have a myriad of people that help us out in terms of guests and yeah, no, it's definitely from, it's easier on the ears in the last, you know, 3 years for everyone. And again, we thank everyone for sticking with us through those early episodes, because the content may have been pretty good, but the production quality certainly was left a bit to be desired.
Yeah, and there was a lot of nice comments on the live chat page from people that have been with us since the start. You know, that as another part I think we're pretty proud of, is that we've maintained a pretty loyal fan base for the most part, with a lot of listeners that have been there since the beginning and you know, stuck with us, and whether they branched out to their shows or they mainly hang with us. That's great, you know, and it took us a while, but we were able to get ourselves in position too to have our full archive up at placeme.podbean.com.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever do want to start from the beginning, iTunes only, you know, can hold up to a certain amount. So if you ever want to go back, if you're new to the show and you want to listen to the archive, the Podbean page has them all for you, so you can check those out. But yeah, I mean, we've talked to people I never thought we'd talk to. You know, I never thought I'd host a show with Kevin Kelly. I never thought I'd talk to Jim Ross or, you know, whoever, you know, Matt Hardy or J.J. Dillon. You know, name them, you know, left or right from whatever show that they've been on. And even, you know, it's funny to think, because the way the internet was set up, even a guy like a Scott Keith or a CRZ, to me, they were, you know, like us, but they also seemed like a notch above. You know what I mean? Like, I never thought I'd actually consider myself like, oh, you know, just buddies enough with Scott or Chris to just reach out and talk, you know,
right.
Jack Chris Zimmerman's night to be on a ridiculous Christmas podcast, you know?
Yes.
So, like, just stuff like that is things I never expected to do. That have just worked out. I mean, you know, it's a combination of our hard work and dedication, but also the timing of it. You know, so if I had to say one thing to be most proud of, it's that we've done this for 5 years. Like, look at how many shows have started and stopped or not stayed on a consistent schedule, come and go, projects come and go, take years off, come back, you know, like, but we've been able to keep it consistent, you know? So, I mean, credit to both of us, I think. I know we both in different ways lead pretty busy lives. So it's, you know, it's, if it wasn't fun anymore and we didn't like doing it anymore, it would be easier to let it slip away, you know, but because we are, have been able to, you know, kind of keep the magic in the marriage, I guess, it's been,
that's right.
It's been easy to keep it rolling. You know what I mean? So
that's right. With Pina Colada both, song. Yeah.
We both have mistresses now, you know, you have the Kevin Kelly show and you have the main event, and it keeps things fresh, you know?
Mixes it up. I thought you were going to say, my wife is one in Knights of Columbus with Scott's mistress. That's where I thought you were headed.
Yes. He's got multiple. He's got Will, too. He's got a network of
alliances. Yes.
But, I mean, I can tell you this, and like I said, and JR's right. I mean, we both lead busy lives different ways, but never in the 5 years have I ever thought this was a job. I never woke up in the morning and like, oh man, I got a busy day and fuck, I got to record tonight. Shit. Mm. Never thought that. Never. Never. And I don't think it ever will be, because it's wrestling and, you know, it's the part of our lives that'll never go away, no matter how lousy the product could be or what have you.
Well, and stuff like this ensures that. And Todd and JD may, you know, chime in here as well, because I know we're all in different spots, especially with the current product and in our, you know, as interest may wane and come back. But I feel the stuff that we do through the site, through the community, you know, our chat room, our chat page, Twitter, you know, like all this stuff, podcasts, kind of helps keep you engaged in the world of wrestling or as a fan.
Oh, yeah.
And without a lot of this stuff, who knows where we'd be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. 100% I agree with that. I know a lot of people will blame the internet wrestling community, you know, just blanket it all together, blame it for ruining fandoms and things like that. For me, I feel like without the internet and a group like Place to Be and the friends that I met there and even a show like this, I don't know that I would be watching wrestling anymore, because I keep up with the current product for Main Event and stuff like that. Not that I hate what I watch or anything like that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I don't like, obviously, but I make it known when I don't
like
it. Yeah, right? But, you know, at the same time, I do it because I like talking with the guys, you know, and I like spending time with people that, you know, I don't get to see in person or anything like that. But it's a pretty important part of my life to have this outlet, because I'm not going to be able to talk about, you know, the booking of WrestleMania to my wife. I mean, I guess I could, but then I won't have a wife for much longer if I keep that up. So I really do like the community that we've built here. And, you know, I know, like, people give me crap, and I'm fine with it for being, like, the negative person. But I think one thing I think that makes this show strong is that even though we are, quote, negative about things, we'll voice our complaints and stuff like that. I don't think any show on this in the whole place to be umbrella really comes off as, like, hating wrestling. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? There are some fans out there that it's like, well, what do you like?
Right.
You know, like they come out and they just rant, and it's just like venom being spewed. And I mean, you know, even tonight's show that we're going to talk about, there's going to be some stuff that we're probably not going to speak positively of, but it's still wrestling, you know, and we can laugh about it. We can say, here's what they should have done different. And I think that's one of the strongest parts of this whole network is that ultimately we enjoy wrestling. And, you know, maybe we don't enjoy the current product. Maybe we don't enjoy some of the older stuff. Maybe there's certain shows, but there's always something you can find that you do like, and it's pretty hard to not be able to find anything. I would say you're not looking hard enough if that's the case. So that's probably my favorite thing about this whole group.
And if we don't like cool. And if we don't like it, we'll find something that we do like to talk about.
You know, sure.
Yeah, we'll create it. Go ahead, Todd.
And just having the different personalities who may like different styles of wrestling, like guys mm-hmm. like Steve Willey, who are so well-versed in the indies and Chikara and stuff like that. You know, maybe we're not so up on the current product, but there's probably something out there that we might like. And having such tight bonds between us talking about these things, it has been pretty special. Hey guys, when do you think you realized that the community was really turning into a thing? Was it the 29 tailgate?
Yeah, that to me, that turned it from, like, because the community was such a big part of it even before then. To me, that turned it from, like, this weird place where we were, like, the hosts and it was fans. And I'm trying to think of a way to say this where it's not, like, a conceited way. Where, you know, like, they were just listeners of the show that would come on the show a lot and participate. But 29 Tailgate turned it more into, like, we're all kind of a big family, you know. And the guys that were mm-hmm. there that brought us all closer together, and then that ignited the site. And it became more of a, like, okay, now we're all working together on this project. You know what I mean? So before that, it was like, hey, we have this awesome group of fans and listeners. They contribute. But it was like kind of still me and Scott, you know. And now mm-hmm. when 29 hit and the site launched, it became like, all right, now we're all leading the show. Now we're all working together to put out this great content.
And I think an extension of that as well is that, you know, before the 29 weekend and the tailgate included, you know, we knew these guys, we knew all of our fans were great wrestling fans, but we really know what kind of people they were. And you know, all right, we all like wrestling. That's nice. But, you know, you could be, you know, a real – and we've run into people like that in our early travails where they're just not nice people. Yeah, we might agree on wrestling, but you're kind of a dick, you know. But
– Jordan.
yeah, we just kept you around for, you know, posterity. No, but that weekend where we sat in the parking lot and you couldn't really talk about wrestling for, you know, 7 hours before we walked into MetLife, we got to know, like, you know, people, and we got to know that, you know, these guys are all really nice guys, you know, and you could talk about other things, sports and things like mm-hmm. that. And that's when the step was taken, and we met Brad, and the step was taken, like, all right, we can actually do really something incredible with this group of people who not only care about the product and, you know, wrestling, but care about each other. And that's what made the tailgate really an important linchpin of our history, because it was not only, you know, we found a network of people to do things with, but that they were, you know, people that we can call family, you know, and this is a people that we'll always defend. And that was a big part of it to see them face to face.
I think what's cool though is the trips that have come out of this, like,
yes,
it wasn't just a one-time thing, and now it's like a yearly thing to look forward to. And if we've kind of expanded, and you bring more and more people into the fold, and you start, like, all of a sudden just going to these pay-per-views, you're like, you know, you're at other places, and I think we all frequent, like, you know, Scott Keats' blog and other message boards, and you see people like, oh, I would never spend money to go to TLC or whatever, and I'm like, Yeah, well, we're going as a big group, and fuck that. I don't care what the product is. You know, like, it's a weekend away or a day away, and we're having a blast. You know what I mean? Like, even this year, we met, you know, Brian Bayless joined us for TLC, new to the group, and it was like just bringing all these new people into the fold and people you never, you know, thought you'd met. And one of my favorite moments from last year was at SummerSlam when, you know, Steve Willey and Glenn Butler, after year, you know, after years of being like close friends on the internet, finally met and embraced, you know, the parking lot of Coney Island. It was like,
yeah,
like a moment to be there for. And Jordan, when we all finally met,
yep,
you know, me, you, and Steve at the 14 Rumble, it was like all these years and all these hours spent talking to each other. And now it's become more than just like voices on the internet. It's like, you know, we take these yearly, like, you know, men's weekend trips, which is just amazing to me, you know. It's like, you know, I have friends, but like to have this group of guys that we all have this one common bond and interest, but we've come beyond that now to where we can, and on a whim, pull together like 10 to 15 to 20 guys to all congregate in an area and spend the weekend together. Is like, you know, Roger and I always say at the end of the weekend, like, it's tough to go back to work the next day. And like, after these weekends are just like so awesome, you know, it's like such a big thing to do. And that to have grown blows my mind, like to where we started, Scott, to have this large extended group of friends,
right,
that we now take trips together and go see wrestling and make a full weekend out of it. It's amazing.
It's nice to have a peer group that you don't have to defend wrestling to.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody else in my life. No, it's the most pure form of contemporary American theater there is, you know, or, you know, making excuses. And we all love it, and it's okay to love it because it's really kind of cool. You think about it. It's not just two guys putting on a fake fight. There's an art to it. And we all love not just the pageantry and the drama and the histrionics, the big picture, you know, the Hollywood aspect of it, but it's just a cool hobby. And it's nice to have people that aren't crazy, aren't psycho, that are into it as well.
And some that are.
And some that are, but the balance must be maintained.
Right.
And the cool thing is, I mean, you know, you can say smart marks, marks, you know, we all know what's going on. We're all wised up to the business, but, you know, we're still marks in one way because the focus has changed, right? So now we're all marks for like the backstage news and the booking and the aspects. So like, that's what's changed about the wrestling business.
Sure.
You know, we still want to see what happens in the ring, but, you know, you're not marking out for, you know, a match in particular as much as you are the performance of the match and perhaps what's, you know, going into the booking. Like, we're all behind Daniel Bryan and wanted to see him win. But a big part of that was too, was the machinations to put him in that spot versus like in 1990, you were just rooting for Hulk Hogan, not, you know, rooting
like,
for
he,
Vince McMahon
he
to
truly
push Hulk
beat,
Hogan.
Yeah. He truly beat the system. Right. Yeah. Not just the storyline system. Yeah.
Right. So that's how wrestling's really, you know, changed. And I think as a group, we've been able to still stay wrapped up in both aspects of that. So, I want to make sure we have time for the vault, so, you know, we can leave that there. Scott, like I said, we could talk more 400, but, you know, I obviously thought it was worthwhile to chat.
Of course.
About our fifth birthday. So why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break now, and then we'll come back and we'll you know, pound out all of our Vintage Vault show. Three of you and none of you was going to say because?
I was just about to.
Mm.
Because?
Because.
Because.
Get into what I mean.
Because of the wonderful things.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place for Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceForNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott,
Dr. G, Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
This is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be Podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
All right, that's more like it. So here we are inside the big steel box, as Scott Criscola would say. And Scotty, yes. Why don't you set up the night for us here?
All right. It is, of course, this evening, episode 395. The gentleman that says it this way is on this show. He wasn't meant to be, but he was. And that is
Taboo Tuesday
2005. A show that we thought was going to be gangbusters and ended up being saved from utter Blog of Doom by the last two matches. So let's dive in. November 1st, 2005. Live from the iPayOne Center in San Diego, California. T-Web, do you remember the last time pay-per-view was in San Diego?
I'll have to say no. I don't remember.
Mm. JD?
No, I don't even remember like what I wore yesterday.
Yeah, you're the first person asking any of these questions. JR?
San Diego. No, I don't actually.
Chris Jericho's Vengeance historic. 01? Yes, Chris Jericho's Vengeance. Historic undisputed championship night at Vengeance 2001. So they have not been in San Diego for almost 4 years.
So. And Stone Cold on the same night.
That's right.
Amazing.
As he continues to remind us every time he's on TV. Mm-hmm. It is Sandy again, and it is also California's to this point in pay-per-view history, California's 18th pay-per-view, which at that moment tied them with the Empire State of New York for most ever. And also like 2001, California's third pay-per-view of the calendar year, which is a lot for one state. Of course, they had the Royal Rumble in Fresno and WrestleMania in Los Angeles. So three pay-per-views in 1 year for the state of California.
Have any of you ever been to San Diego?
I have not.
I know a friend of mine who's gone, a couple of friends who've gone every year to the Comic-Con and enjoy it immensely, but I've never been there.
The city itself is beautiful. You have amazing beaches, but I got to say, some of the most beautiful women you will ever, ever hope to meet.
And Mark Clare doing poetry.
That's right.
On a roof.
On a roof with his scotch and no shoes.
Slam poetry.
Slam poetry, yes. And no shoes.
Slam libertarian poetry.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Bashing Marco Rubio.
Yeah. Your attendance, only 6,000. I believe this is this a new building, JR? I'm not quite sure. This is the same building as the one in 2001?
The iPayOne Center? That's what it's called now. Yeah, because it opened in 1966. So.
Okay, so it's the same place as mentioned. Okay.
Oh.
Your buy rate 0.55, which, again, this was a Tuesday night, so they'll take what they can get. Your announcers, JR, big news involving our announcers on this evening. Tell us about it.
Yeah, lots of news here. So, but before we get to that, Scott, let me do the Sutton facts because...
Yeah, go ahead. Do the Sutton report. Go ahead.
I don't want to upset him. So do you remember the tagline any of you for this pay-per-view?
No. You're in control or something like that. I remember the poster was seen on one side, seen in one monitor, Kurt on the other monitor, and Bischoff.
Bischoff, and duct tape. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember the tagline, though.
It is Login Takeover.
Okay.
Which is a pretty awful, awful name.
Pretty hideous. Great
Login Takeover.
Do you remember the song, any of you?
I know the band was Korn, but
yeah,
I just remember
from watching it.
Yeah, I remember Korn, but I don't remember the song, though.
I know another song called Taboo, but that's from an adult film series.
Yes. that's on the next rank and file.
Yeah.
ranking the Taboo movies.
Our favorite taboos.
Yes. It was like, I know it was two words that began with S. Something, sensation, something. I don't know. Sensation.
Twisted Transistor.
Okay, so it's T. Well, wasn't that far off.
Only one S. Letter off.
Sponsored by WWE.com. Champions John Cena, Ric Flair, Lance Cade, and Trevor Murdoch. Your tags. Trish Stilla, your women's. 649 Raws in the books. Taboo Tuesday Heat. Corinne White and Matt Stryker defeated Shelton Benjamin and Val Venus, who rhymes with...
Venus. So so Chavo was still Kerwin White even after, I guess he had one more Kerwin White match even after Eddie's death before he changed back.
Eddie had not died yet, sir.
Of a gun.
We may have eulogized him in our world, but he is not.
Yeah, that is true. Yes, that is true.
Yeah, this is a Raw pay-per-view, isn't it? And Eddie was more of a SmackDown guy. There were only a couple SmackDown people on this pay-per-view, if I recall correctly.
Yes, in our timeline, Eddie's dead. So. Mm-hmm. Yes. But actually, Eddie dies 13 days later, so that's right.
Okay, so now we can talk about, as Raw returned to USA, Vince McMahon determined Jim Ross was no longer what he was looking for in a lead commentator of his flagship brand for, the 19th time, I believe, he joined. It was also around this time that JR was diagnosed with extra tissue in his colon that would need to be removed surgically. To explain his absence, Vince and Linda McMahon fired Ross on the 10-10 Raw. With Ross needing time off, Vince saw this as an opening to go younger and a more vibrant announcer. Began a public courtship with UFC announcer Mike Goldberg, offered him a giant contract that would include primary Raw announce duties, as well as a bonus to no-show the upcoming UFC pay-per-view. After rumors swirled that Goldberg was going to accept, he balked and decided to stay with the UFC. I think many would argue that's probably the right call, seeing how UFC exploded shortly after. This left Vince in a bind, as he had hoped to have Goldberg in place to announce on the 10-17 Raw. With no big name to bring in, Vince installed Jonathan Coachman as the lead play-by-play guy on 10-17. Not quite thrilled with the coach in that role, he kept searching for JR's replacement and eventually reached out to his old friend, Joey Styles, who we last saw back at One Night Stand. Styles showed up unannounced on this show to fill in for the coach and would take over full-time Raw announcing duties the following week and eventually inked a 5-year deal to become the new lead announcer for Raw. So the speculation of Goldberg's contract was in the region of actually $1 million. He wanted to sign him secretly, have him show up at a Raw homecoming, because that was actually going head-to-head with UFC Fight Night 2 on, I believe, Spike TV. Mike Goldberg turned up on UFC Fight Night, informed Zuffa on what Vince was going to do, and that was that. So what did you guys think when Joey showed up here? Were you excited? Was that were you glad to see him? Do you think he was a good choice?
Oh, I was pumped. I remember I was at the doctor's house, and we put it on. And I know there's a little speculation, but not really. We thought it was just going to be Coach again. And then when Joey actually came out, and I think he came out on the pre-show. I don't think he actually came out when the show started. I think he came out like right before the show went on the air. So that was pretty cool. It was a good move. You know, he'd been working on the website, and there really was no other choice. I'm going to be honest with you. I might have been one of the few guys that was hesitant to have, and now we have a guy, you know, 15 years later in Mauro Ranallo, who, or 11 years later, in Mauro Ranallo, who didn't know a lot about wrestling, and he fits like a glove on SmackDown. I was a little skeptical of having a guy come in totally cold, and be on WWE programming. So actually, part of me was a little relieved that they didn't get Mike Goldberg. Actually. Because I wasn't sure how he would adapt. to the product. This is my opinion. What do you think, T-Web?
You know, I was about to make that same point about Ronaldo. Just there's an instant credibility when there's a guy like that who's really treating it like a sport, mm-hmm. even though, you know, he's probably being yelled at what to do by Vince in the headset. Mauro makes it seem just a little bit more legit, especially when it's just a simple two-man booth. I think Styles worked better when he had somebody to play off too. When he, instead of just the one-man booth that he had in ECW, it was always kind of, I don't know, annoying, nerdy. It was the kind of thing. It was kind of a Mystery Science Theater commentary to me. You know, it was just one guy talking and responding to, not doing a play-by-play as much as doing like a, oh my gosh, oh that was terrible. You know, giving a reaction to everything. Ronaldo has done an awesome job on SmackDown, and if people aren't out there watching it, it's really made it maybe more watchable than Raw at this point. Mm.
Do you guys think though that do you think it works better now? And I'm not again trying to take anything away from Ronaldo or saying Goldberg couldn't have done it, but do you think 2015-16 is more? The lines are more blurred. The product is a little bit more in line with what else is out there with UFC to make that transition a little bit easier. Like a UFC, like UFC wasn't huge in 05, so it would have been cool to get him, but it wasn't like a huge, massive get. I mean, UFC was growing, but it wasn't the phenomenon it is now. And on the other side, too, wrestling is much more different now in 2005. 2005 was much closer to, you know, 97, 98, 99 than it is what it is now.
Well, I thought it would be more of a political move to take Goldberg away from UFC as UFC is growing and growing and becoming more popular, cutting into maybe people's pay-per-view budgets. Now, you think that was an offensive move by attempted offensive move by Vince
right.
to cut that off. But I don't think it would be that big of a difference back then. Maybe now. I mean, I'm trying to imagine Goldberg even being liking the product, you know.
I don't think he would have lasted. I don't see it would have worked out well.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
For them, I think it would have ended ugly and quickly. I mean, and it does with Joey, and Joey's a lifelong wrestling guy. You know what I mean? And how long does that end up lasting? I mean, and we'll talk about it. But anyway, so Joey Styles, your new lead play-by-play man for Raw, debuts here at Taboo Tuesday.
Yes. Yep, and. And of course, Jerry the King Lawler, they're still out in the catacombs mm-hmm. because obviously Eric Bischoff still in charge of Raw. You did your Sutton report. We have our heat. Let's dive in.
Okay.
All right. Our first match involves the burgeoning feud for the first time since the brand split, a legit feud between the two brands, Red Brand Raw, Blue Brand SmackDown. The originally scheduled tag match. Well, why don't we get into the backstory of it, and then we'll explain what happened.
Okay. On 10-3, Edge defeated Matt Hardy in the ladder match that we talked about. Due to that stipulation, Hardy left Raw. Edge stayed on Raw. Hardy went to SmackDown. Also on that 10-3, Vince McMahon announced there'd be a special SmackDown match on the show. As we talked about on that episode, Scott, Eric Bischoff turned off the lights, mm-hmm. pissed off Teddy, and Teddy wanted revenge. So they closed out that show with a big brawl. On 10-17, the cross-brand war continued when JBL's music played during an Edge match, causing him to lose. In response, Edge and Chris Masters showed up on 10-21, assaulted Rey Mysterio when he was wrestling JBL. On 10-24, was announced that Edge and Masters would wrestle two SmackDown wrestlers at the pay-per-view. After the announcement, Rey attacked Edge, and the next week, Mysterio was invited to participate in the Master Lock Challenge, but Rey instead attacked Masters, triggering another big brawl. At the pay-per-view, prior to the match, Edge ducked out of the bout, saying he didn't care about Raw or any of this, and announced that Snitsky would be replacing him. And the fan vote had to do with who the SmackDown team would be, and the choices were Matt Hardy, Rey Mysterio, JBL, Christian, and Hardcore Holly. And this is notable because... I'm sorry?
I was going to say, and it was the top two. The top two vote getters.
Top two would be
Christian was... Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, notable because this is Christian's final pay-per-view appearance for a long time. Is that what you were going to say, Todd?
Yeah, that was. I loved his little hoodie. It was pretty sharp.
And it's weird to see him, you know, go out that way because been around forever, and the fact that he leaves, kind of so. Just that's it. he's smiling in the
show
back.
Show backstage for 3 seconds.
And I'm pretty sure his contract was already up anyway. We talked about this at No Mercy though, Scott. So we don't have to go into it now. But his contract was up, and he showed up here just to kind of run things out and, you know, be a good soldier before he retired and took time off and debuted at TNA like 3 days later. But
yeah.
All right.
Pretty
so,
random selection of guys, though. Did anybody really think the fans, the universe, was going to pick JBL or Hardcore Holly
for
this match? I mean, it's you've got the choice, people, but really, we know what you're going to do. So we're
vote for the guys who are already involved in this story somewhat.
Yeah, right. and her faces.
Yeah,
and it's their hometown.
That too. Very, very, very skewed towards that. Plus the natural Hardy Edge stuff, and
sure.
You know, natural team to be pitted against each other. And Lita gets on the mic before the match, and like we said, Edge says he won't wrestle. Edge backs her up. He says he doesn't care. The fans, Matt Hardy or Raw, and says Siski was replacement. And on paper, you start to say, oh, man, all right, 1-0 for 1, right? I mean, already out of the gate, this match is going to blow. But I ended up being a little bit surprised. So Masters attacks from behind, and Siski joins him. And Siski's been fun, but a downgrade here. Fans not thrilled. Masters gets a one-handed delayed suplex on Ray in a pretty cool spot. We get two referees in the ring, one from each brand. Another cool touch for the war, but also gets kind of annoying after a while having two guys in there. Siski and Masters use power moves to abuse Ray, pick up some near falls. Ray tries to counter and get some air, but Masters blocks with an inverted powerbomb, goes through a tight chin lock. Ray gets out of that with a head scissors, makes a tag to Hardy, who comes in hot. Hardy rattles both guys and then hits a superplex for two on Siski. Siski, big boot, turns the tide again. The bigs go back to power offense to dominate. And I like the offense here by the heels. They're very varied. It was a basic formula, but some power moves mixed in. And both have been very effective, both in this match, I thought, Scott, and some of the shows we've been watching. Masters is very smart. He traps Hardy's legs while making a tag, and then Siski pastes Ray. Ray comes in with a sprint attack, but gets trapped in the master lock. He holds on and pins Masters back to the mat. SmackDown ref counts, but Raw ref stops, saying he wasn't down. So we get a brawl breaking out. That leaves Hysterio dives by Ray and Matt off the top. Flurry of near falls, and I loved the closing moments here. I thought they were really good. Good teamwork from both sides. Ray hits a 619 on Masters. Hardy hits a twist of fate, and then a springboard splash from Ray for the win. The closing sequence was very hot. The crowd popped big at the end. You know, part of me thinks, and we can take this back to our Unforgiven discussion, that maybe you could have had Masters win with the lock here to kind of reestablish him after losing to Shawn, but the finish was so good and the crowd was so hot, it's hard to bitch about it too much. I thought the match was well put together. Siski and Masters were impressive, and Hardy and Ray were easy to get behind from a face and peril standpoint, but I really dug this match, and for a match that seemed like it was going to be very blah at the start, because taking Edge out and putting those guys in on paper looked bad, but I thought it ended up being pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think the pace of it, I mean, they got a lot of time, more time than I thought they would, almost, 14 minutes? Yeah, 13:44. I was expecting it to be really slow, and the big guys would just lumber their offense, but it felt like even, you know, Masters and Snitsky even kind of kept the pace going, and, you know, very unique kind of hybrid power offense. And the match never really slowed down, and to have two easy, I mean, two smaller guys, obviously Ray's small, and you know, Matt's cruiserweight size. I mean, they took a good beating. They're both good faces in peril, and everything in the match worked more than I think people thought it would. The drama from a psychology standpoint was gone because Edge was not in the match anymore, but they definitely all brought their working boots, and you thought this show was actually going to be pretty good. You know, because this match kind of came out of nowhere and entertained you. But I definitely enjoyed the power offense from the heels. I think Masters learned a lot from his match with Shawn. And, you know, it ended up being a pretty good opener. I was pretty impressed.
That
gentlemen?
Superplex. Did you guys see the superplex spot with Hardy and Snitsky?
Yeah, it was ugly.
It looked, yeah, it looked a little botched. And I was scared that, you know, he hurt his neck or something. But he got up in a minute or
two. Yeah, it almost looked like it was supposed to be a DDT of some kind. And Snitsky went the full rotation with it and hurt himself pretty bad.
Snitsky was down on the mat for a little bit extra time, and I found myself distracted by all the back acne that Snitsky has. No, it was a pretty good match, and shoot, Masters could have really been something, honestly. He really could have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's one of the guys I've been most impressed with watching these.
You know, I think too, you know, JR, you mentioned, you know, maybe you could have given him some of his heat back by having him get the win. But even too, you think about even in the loss, he took both guys' finishers. You know, he took a 619, then a twist of fate, then the splash, and that's what it took to take him down. So, I mean, that's about the best way you can have a guy lose, and they pretty much dominated the match most of the way. It's really effective in terms of an opener. It's just a lot of fun. And like Scott said, you know, you watch that first match, you're like, oh, this show's going to be pretty good. Because I was telling you guys in the chat earlier, I outside of the cage match we'll see later, I don't think I'd ever seen this show before.
Right.
This was like a period for me where I was watching the shows, but I wasn't getting the pay-per-views outside of, you know, Mania, Rumble, maybe SummerSlam, depending on the card. So this stuff is all pretty new to me, and this is a really fun match. And I think that's, you know, sometimes that's all a match needs to be, especially when you're kicking off the show, is just say, right. Hey, wrestling's fun. Let's have fun with it. So
right.
They were doing 14 pay-per-views a year at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2006 like would 2006 would get even bigger.
It's a lot of money, and I didn't have a local pub to go see him in. So, yeah, I didn't see this live at the time either.
And like we had said, too, I mean, you know, natural face and peril guys to get behind in Hardy and Mysterio.
Oh, yeah. That either one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. First win for the babyfaces. Big win for SmackDown. Ray and Matt Hardy with the win over Masters and Snitsky on his signature pay-per-view, Taboo Tuesday. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Taboo Tuesday.
Mr. Taboo Tuesday.
The king of Taboo
Tuesday. It's not my fault.
We go backstage here real quick where Mick Foley and Maria realize their gear got mixed up. Ends up with Maria getting naked, and she gives Mick everything she had on because she had on all his like Mankind gear, and he was holding up her lingerie. So that was a pretty funny bit. It was quick, but just kind of pushing the Maria's a dit stuff.
Yes.
How bad must that mask smell at that point?
Right? Awful.
God. And she makes a crack about it, too, I think, too.
Yeah.
It smells weird. All right, next up, we have a Legends gimmicky match, and this begins kind of our 3 or 4 match stretch where things kind of get a little bowl circling. Give us a...
Hey, PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
This is Kevin Kelly with your Rob Houston Memorial Place to Be podcast, Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update. In September of 2005, Hacksaw Jim Duggan had just returned to the WWE, and he found himself in a bit of a conflict of interest. You see, when it was time to do the tribute to the troops, Hacksaw Jim Duggan had to unveil himself to President George W. Bush as a secret agent who was quietly working for the Iraqi government. This has been your Place to Be podcast update about Hacksaw Jim Duggan and hopefully another 5 years. Happy birthday, guys.
Fuck you, you pasty Craig the George wannabe. This is my gig.
American flag over my shoulder.
Jim Duggan back in the house here, Scoggs. Our next, like you mentioned, our next poll, our next voting has to do with who's going to team up with Eugene against Rob Conway and Tyson Tomko, still hanging on. But it is his final pay-per-view. After bouncing on Raw, Tomko asked for his release in April 2006, headed to Japan for a brief stint before heading to TNA late in the year. He would stay in TNA until 2008, when he would head back to WWE for a brief stint, would never make it to TV, injured his back, was quite released. 2009, went to Japan and TNA, released from TNA in 2010, final record in the WWE, 1-3. Rob Conway, we talked about him a lot at the Raw Homecoming, mm-hmm. But was having his issues with Eugene, tormented him, specifically on Heat. On 10/31, Conway and Eugene squared off, but the match ended in a DQ and Conway hit him with a chair. The attack brought out Jim Duggan, Kamala, Jimmy Snuka, and Jerry Lawler for the save. The Legends got some revenge and took out Conway. If you remember, he had his issues with the Legends at that Homecoming show. And a pay-per-view match intended to be a handicap match, but Bischoff added in Tomko as Conway's partner to level the playing field. And sadly, also Conway's final pay-per-view appearance embarked on a massive long losing streak that amounted to a long 14 months. He would achieve only one victory, and that was a mixed tag match on Heat. New Year's 2007, faced off with Jeff Hardy, vowed to quit if he lost, and he did. But shortly after, Mr. McMahon came out and said he couldn't quit because he was fired. And he actually was. He stuck around, wrestled in OVW till May, and since then has worked other indie organizations. And, of course, actually was NWA champion at one point as well. And now he was final record at 2-7. The voting, 42% for Jimmy Snuka, 40% for Jim Duggan, 18% for Kamala. So there's that. So Jimmy Snuka is your tag team partner. Conway Tomko, anti-Eugene legend. The vote was fun. Kind of Kamala Duggan come out of nowhere. Duggan returns fully into the fold. He'll stick around now. Snuka winning to me was kind of blah, but not really a surprise. Good spot for Eugene, much better than where he was a year ago. Comedy stuff is better for him. Eugene messing with Tomko before teasing attack to Snuka. Conway clubs him from behind. Conway hits a nice drop kick, quickly tags to pound on Eugene. Crowd has completely flattened out here after the hot opener. Conway grinds Eugene with a chin lock, but Eugene trips up both and tags out. Snuka wakes the crowd up. He chops Conway. Eugene fends off Tomko, and then he and Snuka take turns bashing Conway with headbutts. Eugene hits a rock bottom on Conway, and Snuka hits the splash for the win. Tomko beats on both guys after the match, but Duggan and Kamala make the save, hit their finishers, and this is a complete nothing match. I think it's a complete waste of Conway. It's a good use of Eugene and for nostalgia. It was brief. The crowd dug the legend stuff at the end, but didn't really care about the match. So, Scott, what was your thoughts on the match? And also, you know, where are you at with both Conway and Eugene?
Well, just to wrap up your fun fact of Conway, it was March 16th, 2013, he would win the NWA world title. He beat some guy named Cahagas or Cahagas, something like that. No, he didn't win shit. the match is garbage. I mean, it's pretty. Well, he wouldn't have made it any better.
I just miss Jeremy Nichols giggling like a schoolgirl every time when we do the dug and cut in.
Speaking of old school, I liked Conway. I thought the theme was great. I thought the theme was great. I thought his gimmick was good, and I thought he was a good worker. So I was a little disappointed. They kind of like. Threw him out there. He lasted for like a month, and then he shit the bed. It was very strange.
Well, he was one of those guys with a group of them, and Todd and JD, if you remember, chime in here. But I mean, I feel like one of those lost generation guys. You know, there's a few of them.
I was thinking that while I was watching the show. Yeah,
you can even throw Eugene in that mix. Really, Nick Dinsmore. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were guys that were very heavily touted in OVW that kind of never really clicked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know they. Go ahead, JD.
I was gonna say the Basham brothers, same thing, which they were DiMaggio and something else, Danny Basham down in OVW, and then they were nothing when they got put up on SmackDown.
Well, I mean, they were tag team champions.
Yeah, that's nothing, though.
And they were in JBL's cabinet. No, that's nothing. They were main eventers. No, that's nothing.
No, but I agree with JD as far as, I mean, when you look at the potential and the way they were spoken of.
Right, right.
I mean, they were supposed to come up and be like, you know, cornerstones, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Conway was a guy that I really liked, and I thought the song "Look at Me" it was a great theme, I thought his gimmick was cool. What's that, Todd?
Sounded like Randy Newman.
Yeah,
it did. Definitely.
Yes, and it did.
Just look at me.
Did you notice he was wrestling with his sunglasses for the first minute or so of
yes.
the match?
Yes, they made a point to say that too, Joey and Jerry. It was pretty funny.
It was quite the murderer's row of legends there.
Well, the Duggan and Kamala ones at the time were pretty cool because if you kind of put yourself back in 05, I guess, the legend stuff was still kind of burgeoning. Like, we weren't fully engrossed yet. And those guys hadn't been around. I mean, Duggan hadn't really been around anything since. I mean, he was doing indies and shit, but since WCW closed. And Kamala, when the hell was the last time he was around? So, I mean, Snuka was a go-to guy for them, but it was kind of cool seeing, and we'll talk about, you know, another guy later that kind of came out of nowhere. October 5 is a really weird month. To me, it's one of the weirdest months in company history, and we'll talk about it more. But October, November, very odd. Very odd stuff.
You know what else is really weird? All three of those guys are still alive.
Right? Yeah, that too.
Grab any other random sampling of legends or retired wrestlers at that time, and most of them are gone at this point.
Yeah.
Well, Snuka should be dead, but, I mean, you know.
Well, you should be hitting license plates.
You know how this past year they just kind of announced Elimination Chamber, like, on 2 weeks' notice? I think it'd be awesome if they did another Taboo Tuesday, but this time the legends that we could vote for are Rob Conway and Tyson Tomko and Eugene.
Well, we're voting Tomko from the grave, but I get your point. Right? He's dead.
Did Tomko die?
I didn't.
Well, maybe not. Didn't he get busted, though? Wasn't he like...
No, he became Bismarck. No.
They found him, like, in a bathroom. Wasn't he, like, shooting up heroin in a fucking bathroom or something crazy?
No, he's 39 years old. He currently is training in Florida.
Oh. But that's not him? Who did they find?
Yeah, he... Way to besmirch the good name of Tyson Tom.
Yeah, no. He got in trouble. October 11th, Tom goes arrested on robbery charges, robbing 210 tablets of oxycodone from a CVS. Reportedly went into the pharmacy several days in a row to ask for it, and then ended up doing it. Then they gave him three bottles of Oxy, walked out the door. He went to a nearby Chili's, injected 178 crushed up and melted down pills into his system, spent 30 to 40 minutes in the restroom, and then he got arrested and then went into rehab.
You should laugh, man.
Yeah, no, you would. I mean, yeah, I knew he had some kind of problem. I thought he died from it, but that's good. I'm glad he's not.
That's pretty wild that he didn't die from that.
Wow, right? How many of them? 170?
Especially if he got, like, what did he get at Chili's? You know? I mean,
yes.
Give me the feed, I'll be back.
Excuse me, I need a bathroom and some of those Southeastern egg rolls.
Well, I kind of picture it like Hall Pass, where he went to Applebee's first. He's like, no, man. We're going to go to Chili's and do this out.
Man, what a combination. You go to Chili's, you usually get diarrhea right away. But when you have oxycodone, that stops you up, right? So...
Well, if you have 178 of them, yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, Jim Duggan, by the way, that's fun for Scott.
Rob Conway had a match on New Japan's TV show about like 5 weeks ago.
Did he really?
Believe it or not. Yep. He looks a little more like Eugene now. Got the long hair and the beard and stuff.
Yeah. I saw him when he was NWA champion. He fought Sid at the little casino here in Rhode Island. Mr. Flanagan and I attended just for the hell of it on a whim. We got in for free, so it was pretty entertaining seeing Rob.
Yeah, it was an NWA title match because New Japan they air stuff like if it aired 5 weeks ago, it probably happened a year ago.
Right.
I'm not sure who he fought. I can't remember at the time, but
There you go. So Eugene,
interesting that I've seen two Rob Conway matches this month.
More than
here's a great
see
here's one. A great one. Right. Based on the appearance of this is personal life. Based on the appearance of the local wrestlers, he thought it would take only 6 months to make it to WWE. Eventually took him 6 years. He also starred in the movie with Val Venus called Thuggin' It the Conway.
There you go.
That should be JD's new podcast.
Thuggin' It the Penis Way.
The Conway.
All right. Why don't we go to our next match here, or else we're going to be
all right. Yeah. Before we find some more guys
more
aren't dead.
Than that match deserved.
all right. So next up, we have another match involving three legends. However, mm-hmm. it's the same guy and three legendary gimmicks or right. faces, if you will. JR already mentioned this gentleman earlier. How did we get to this point?
Well, on 10/17, Carlito was in his cabana talking smack about the recently fired Jim Ross, like everyone else was, when Mick Foley made a surprise appearance to join him. They jawed back and forth over JR about him being cool before Foley walked off. Later in the show, Carlito challenged Foley to a pay-per-view match, and he accepted. The next week, Stephanie McMahon came out and had a confrontation with Foley over JR's firing. That drew Carlito out as well. Stephanie would drop Foley with a low blow, and Carlito spit apple on him. Carlito also beat him down again later in the night when Foley was a referee. And on 10/31, we got a classic Foley Titantron sketch where he was morphing from character to character to character, issuing warnings for Carlito. Then the votes came, and Mankind won at 52%, Cactus Jack 35%, and the Dude 13%. And I was surprised that Mankind won.
Me too.
I thought for sure Cactus would win, but Foley, I mean, I guess really the Mankind character had been pretty much dead since 99, so it's been a while. Carlito, of course, kind of a guy dropping down the ladder. We'll talk about that in a minute. Categories much more inconsequential so far this year, too. Like, these categories really mean nothing. There's, like, nothing of consequence at all. Which outfit should Mick Foley win to, you know, have a squash match with Carlito? Carlito been dissing Foley. Things escalated. We get some quick brawling early. And I was a little disappointing. I thought it was a ripoff that Foley was in the sweats and the shitty shirt and tie and the fat, lazy Mankind instead of, like, you know, if you're going to do the Mankind thing, go all the way. Come out in the brown
tights.
Rip
your
hair
out. Yeah.
Just do the whole thing. You know, if
you came out to his theme. I mean, came out to the 96 theme. You might as well have put him in it, you know?
It's like,
did you notice after he won and walked back, he didn't go back to the, you know, he had two themes. He had a returning theme, too.
Yes, right. the
piano.
The piano, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But
lazy
he didn't,
all around. Lazy all around.
Lazy.
So, match spills outside eventually. Mankind rakes Carlito's eyes, smacks him in the tree of woe. Then they go outside. Mankind grabs a chair. Carlito drops a toehold, and Mankind crashes into the steps and the chair at the same time.
Carlito gets a nice dropkick on the floor that Mankind smacks back into the steps. And I mean, God bless Mick Foley in this fucking shit match. You know, he's out there taking bumps to the stairs and stuff. Carlito focused offense back in the ring. He hooks on a sleeper. Mankind starts to be running out of gas. A double clothesline takes both out. Mankind comes back, clotheslines Carlito to the floor, follows with a vintage elbow off the apron, and then finishes with a Socko claw. And I thought that finish sucked. You know, the match wasn't too bad due to a couple spots, but just messy. Mick was in awful shape. Carlito's aimless, going nowhere. Such a fall for him since he went to Raw in the summer. You know, if you look at his last couple shows, just really going nowhere. Kind of sad to see his potential wasted. Loses to Flair at Unforgiven. Then, you know, jobs to clearly out of shape Mankind. And the crowd was into him, but completely counterproductive. And Foley would talk about this later, Scott, well, you know, when we get to his next set of matches. Talked about how this match motivated him because of how awful, you know, he looked it was in this match. Just completely out of shape and gassed. I thought this one was kind of shitty and kind of sad to watch, and especially seeing him out there in the sweatpants and everything, just lumbering around.
It was the shits. There was no doubt about it. I mean, I don't know if Carlito like pissed somebody off. Was there some kind of backstage thing? Because it seemed like he was so hot when he first got to Raw from SmackDown. He won the IC belt from a pretty hot Shelton Benjamin. And then, you know, now he's lost to Flair, and he loses here in a match. He probably should have won. But instead, you just – and it's not even a good seven – and it's 7 minutes. Ugh. I mean, it's bad. And like you said, I mean, sloppy sweatpants. And, I mean, if they had gone one step further and brought back those bad 99, like, powder blue ones with a hole in the knee and everything, and you're like, oh, God. It was bad. It was bad. It was about as bad as you could get. And I don't know what would have motivated Foley to want to keep wrestling, but – It was the shits. I wasn't
having another baby, I think, and having his wife say, "Geez, you're just sitting around the house all the time, Mick."
Right. Get
back. Why don't you throw your head into some stairs?
Well, and it speaks right. More to this time that we're in, this fall of 05, where, you know, WWE doesn't seem to know what their identity is anymore. It's like they had moved past the attitude stuff and really focused on the new guys. So now we're still kind of there, but we're back on USA. We're revisiting attitude. The McMahons are back on. Vince is kind of really, you know, taking things to an asshole level in many ways. And we're starting to see a lot of these legends slip back into the fold and be utilized more, some in good ways, some in bad. So it kind of all comes together out of nowhere. And, you know, they're in a weird spot, the company. They have this war going on between the brands. Just a lot going on. That was kind of my point when I was saying like, it's a weird time. But, you know, JD and Todd, what did you guys think about Foley here? Just how he looked in general and also just the fall of Carlito.
Go ahead, Jordan.
I thought Mick looked pretty bad. And again, going back to the fact that I hadn't seen the show, I didn't really know any of the results outside of the main one. So watching it, even though he looked bad, I kind of assumed Carlito would win. So then when he lost, I'm like, wow, that really, really stunk, you know? And they could have even, I mean, they could have just had him cheat and win, you know, like hit him in the nuts or something. I mean, I guess they do that in a couple later matches. But It just compounds how bad he looks when he goes on to win the match too. You know, it's one thing to trot a guy out there and he looks bad,
right?
But at least he loses, and he's, you know, maybe you can try and sell that Carlito beat a legend or something like that. But then you haven't beat the guy too. It's just kind of like kicking dirt on him when he's already down. And I don't know what happened with Carlito, because when he came in, Carlito was pretty awesome. I really liked him, and mm-hmm. I liked his character a lot. And even still, it still seemed like the crowd at least responded to him. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the crowd was done with him. It's just one of those things where you have to, yeah, it's like, okay, did he not, you know, you hear those stories, did he not shake hands with somebody at catering or something like that, you know? But it was really, like, the Flair one, you can at least make a case for, because Flair was an every week character at this point,
right?
You know? So that one's maybe explainable a little bit, but just to bring a guy back just to beat him, and then was Foley just done after that? Like, was he around? I mean,
he'd come and go a little bit, and then,
but it is, you know,
by the spring,
kinda,
he starts, you know, he's on, but.
So.
What's also weird, it's amazing how low he fell, even from a year before. I mean, just go back to the Backlash 04 with Orton, how mm-hmm. awesome that match was, and he wasn't in the greatest shape, but he was at least, like, moving around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know the levels of match are different. I mean, the Backlash was a legit storyline match.
Sure.
This is kind of just a voting throwaway thing. But it's amazing. He wasn't even moving the same. It's crazy what, you know, 15, 16 months does to you when you are sitting on your ass at home doing nothing, you know?
And the older you get, the harder it is to get that rust off.
For sure.
That's right, Dennis.
Right, Scott. Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, even if you want to have Foley come back for the pop here, you know, maybe throw him in the Eugene match and let them win there. And,
sure.
And let Carlito beat one of the other legends. Like, let Carlito beat Snuka in a match. You know what I mean? Like, do something like that. Like, why sacrifice Carlito? To me, that's the bigger issue in question.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree.
I even think you could do, like, I mean, knowing that Edge wasn't going to be in the match, why not just team up Carlito and Masters? You know?
Right, that too, right.
Because yeah, they would start doing that soon anyway, and that would lead to something heading into
unless
the new year.
Unless they didn't know Edge was out. You know,
yeah, that's true.
The match. But either way, to me, it seems like they could have protected him more, and they didn't. So we go backstage here. Eric Bischoff is on the phone bitching about Teddy Long. Vince comes in, yells at Bischoff for allowing Raw to lose on his own pay-per-view. Bischoff says Teddy cheated, but Vince says he hates excuses and wants Bischoff to do something about it. Eric says, well, what do you want me to do? You're the man. Vince says he's tired of stepping up and helping and tells Bischoff to do something on his own. He wants creativity and killer instinct. And says he won't change Bischoff's diapers anymore. And I think this is good stuff that could have led somewhere, but instead it kind of just feels like the dumping on Bischoff's legacy at this point more than anything else.
Yeah.
And maybe they knew his time was coming up, so they were just kind of running him into the ground. But with all the stuff going on with Cena that we'll talk about later, and where he was, it felt like they could have really built... You know, it's too bad they didn't maybe give... you know, wishful rebooking, but could they have given like the invasion thing one more shot and had Bischoff legitimately take one of these shows from Vince and say, screw
sure
you, now I'm going to compete against you and I'm going to start bringing my own guys in and running your shit balls out of here. You know what I mean? Like, could he have done something like that?
Mm. I mean, if you really wanted to boost, SmackDown, yeah, you could have done that. Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, Scott Steiner would be happy to come back. Let's see. see some other guy. You had Flair. You had Ray.
Bobby Eaton could have come back.
Dave Taylor.
Reno.
We're ready for a Blue Bloods reunion.
That's right. Dun, 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 Squire Dave Taylor.
So we get up with the main event later, but Shawn Michaels wins the vote to be into the Triple Threat main event. They do that now because like we have
a close year. Vote, though, by
yeah,
the way.
Surprisingly close, actually. Of course, at 46% to Kane's 38. So I don't know. People were into Kane still, I guess, at this point. Yeah. Big Show at 16%. And the reason they did that now is because, like in 04, the losers would team up in a tag team title match, Scott.
Yes. The two other gentlemen, Kane and the Big Show, would take on your world tag team champions, the team of Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch, who won the titles back at Unforgiven when they beat Hurricane and Rosie. Yeah.
And a team, you know, like Carlito in many ways that you'd expect to have a good run. And I think this match here, we'll talk about in a second, to me speaks to the schizophrenia of the company. Of they didn't know what they wanted to be. Like you have this really solid young tag team in place.
Great heels.
Right. Let's let them run a bit. They've been champions less than a month. So, Kane and Murdoch, they're rounding nicely into the gimmick, building momentum. Styles runs down the accomplishments and pass of Show and Kane to put over their strengths. Kane smacks Murdoch around early. Murdoch derails Kane for a moment and makes a tag, but Kane overpowers him and tags in Show to a pop. Show lights up Cade with some big chops. Cade makes a tag, but Murdoch catches the same kind of beating with chops and headbutts. Cade back in, but Challenger is still dominating until Murdoch shoves Kane to the floor off the top rope. Kane and Murdoch hit the high and low on the floor. The champs then double team a bit, but Kane comes back by choking Cade and fighting through another double team to make the tag. Cade avoids a splash from Big Show in the corner, but Murdoch walks into a flying clothesline from Kane and gets thrown to the floor. Kane and Big Show double chokeslam on Cade for the win, and then they hit one on Murdoch as well after the bell. And I was not a fan of the finish. I thought Cade and Murdoch were really coming along, and this completely stopped them dead. Big Show and Kane are cool. But they're kind of division killers. You know, the dominant in how they're booked, they should either stay above the tag fray or let Kane and Murdoch get a huge win over them. Like, I thought this was counterproductive. After we saw what they did to Carlito, and now we're right back here with Kane and Murdoch as well, sacrificing young stars to do what? I'm not sure. Because if you're looking to say, okay, well, let's get the titles on Show and Kane and eventually let them put over a team, well, you could have done that here with Kane and Murdoch. You know, so what's the end game? Other than to say your vote matters in some way, I don't know. I don't really get the point of this one.
I don't either because it almost feels like it didn't feel this way a year ago, but I almost feel like they were trying to reward the viewer for buying this pay-per-view by having all the good guys win. It just seemed really strange. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
There was really no – I mean, and the buy rate shows it didn't really matter. I mean, 0.55 isn't great. I know it is a Tuesday, but
like a tribute to the troops.
Yeah, exactly. Something mm-hmm. like WrestleMania 3 or something, like, you know, 90% of the good guys win. It just seemed really weird that you would sacrifice these awesome heels just to make everybody happy. It seemed very it's kind of silly. It's kind of short-sighted, you know, because, I mean, this one makes even less sense than the Carlito one. Who cares if Cena, Big Show, or tag team champion?
I've always thought, too, like, especially with tag matches, it's so easy if you don't want your tag team to definitively beat a team. It's so easy to have a team beat another team that you just sell the fact that Kane and Big Show aren't a tag team and just have them screw up somewhere. You know, it's such an easy story to tell. Like, oh, Kane and Murdoch, you know, they're overpowered, they're undersized, but they're a team and they've got team experience. And just have Big Show not cost, you know, not make a tag when he's supposed to, and right. sell that as the story. You know,
or I mean, if you want to keep them together, I mean, if you want to keep Kane and Murdoch as champs and not necessarily have them get the win, just have them leave. Just, you know, walk away with the titles. That's fine, just, heel stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I have to wonder if Cade was dealing with some demons even then.
That could be.
Maybe that explains it. I don't know.
Possible. I don't know if they came off TV.
They both bumped pretty darn good for those guys.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought they just axed momentum of a promising team pretty quick, mm-hmm. and I thought they did the same thing to Carlito you know, a month ago with the Flair thing. But like you said, JD, the Flair thing, you can kind of, okay, fine, you know, whatever. But
sure.
This one just felt like gratuitous. I don't know. I didn't care for it at all. And the match was just kind of there. And the crowd was into it, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. The same thing is one thing that surprised me the most. The crowd was really into Big Show and Kane.
Yeah, they got
team.
Pumped. They were pumped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. New World Tag Team Champions, the Big Show and Kane. For what reason, we don't know.
So we go backstage again where the coach is giving a pep talk, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Back out on the stage come the Divas to their voting to be revealed, and Lingerie wins their vote. And that's what they'll be wrestling in their Battle Royal. Lingerie, 43%. Leather and Lace, 32%. Cheerleader, 25%. And, of course, you get the Pervy King stuff freaking out over the over the Lingerie winning. Creepy as always. And Styles basically even makes an erection joke in there somewhere. So,
yes.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yes. And involved in that, we will have a debut coming up during that match as well. So stay tuned for that. Here, though, we have returns. And our next match, which probably is the – I mean, I think we've sank – it seems like with every match, booking-wise, we sink lower and lower. And this one really is about as low as you could possibly get. Because this was supposed to be – one guy versus a guy, and then that guy ended up leaving, and it just got worse. I don't know. Proceed and with the build, and then we have our returns.
All right, so following Jim Ross's firing, Vince McMahon installed Jonathan Coachman as lead announcer, like we mentioned. Coach wore a cowboy hat like JR and mocked him while on commentary. On 10/17, JR's good friend Steve Austin showed up looking for revenge on behalf of his buddy. He would have a confrontation with Stephanie McMahon, and they agreed Austin would wrestle Coach at the pay-per-view with a pair of stipulations. If Austin won, JR would be rehired, but if Coach won, Austin would be fired. Austin agreed and then confronted Coach, who nervously backed down from Stone Cold. On 10/24, we were treated to one of the most bizarre skits in history as Vince McMahon dressed up as Dr. Heine and mocked JR's recent colon surgery. The skit started okay, lasted way too long, and then fell apart completely. It was dragged on and on and on, as Vince kept pulling random shit out of JR's ass. Many found it to be very offensive. It was defended by Doty and others as they claimed the skit happened once they confirmed the surgery was a success and not cancerous. When 10/31 rolled around, things had changed dramatically. Rumor is that Vince wanted Steve Austin to job to the coach to build heat on JR's return. Austin saw the writing on the wall, basically said no thank you, had no intention of putting over an announcer and kind of a part-time guy. Just like in 2002, Austin took his ball and walked off and went home just weeks before a pay-per-view. With all that going on, Vince showed up on October 31st, said Austin had better in an accident and wouldn't be able to compete, basically hinted that Austin may be using the accident as an excuse to not fight the coach. Prior to the announcement, Coach had brought back the returning Goldust and explaining he would be Coach's backup at the pay-per-view. Vince then announced that he promised Coach a match and he brought out a replacement for Naki. Coach and Goldust quickly took him out and Coach issued an open challenge for the pay-per-view. And with that came Batista, the world champion, making his return to Raw.
stormed to the ring, and a brawl broke out. As they fought, Vader showed up out of nowhere, helped Coach and Goldust take out the Animal, and the pay-per-view was now changed, and the JR stipulation completely dropped, and basically that part of the angle gone. And now, for some reason, we land on Batista versus Coach, Goldust, and Vader in a match. Well, I guess it's straight up Batista versus Coach, but it's a street fight, and Goldust and Vader are basically in the match. But the highlight of all this, and if you guys remember, is Vader, when he steps off the ring apron on Raw, falls and fell on his ass.
Yep.
One of the most iconic Raw moments of that era was him just bouncing off the floor, just looking like a goof, and really much bigger than when we last saw him.
Yes. So our let's talk about our two returns, but our first one, JR, is – been a long time since we've done this.
Of course, he was released in 2003, back in December. Since that time, yes. Had a run in TNA, returned to the show, disappeared after it, popped back up in 06. And then he vanishes again for quite a while. Just touching quickly on the storyline again, Steve Austin eventually did an interview with Fighting Spirit magazine, and he said they did not ask him to job to Coach. They wanted him to work with Coach, and it was going to come down with Mark Henry or something else involved. He said he can't really remember, but he doesn't think it was about doing a job to the Coach. So I don't know what the official story is on all that, but
I don't either. It's kind of strange.
So the other return, Vader, making his first appearance since 1998. Left late 98, spent time in Japan and TNA as well. After the show, would hit the indie circuit, retired at the end of 06, outside of a match here and there. He's pretty much stayed on the sidelines, training his son to become a wrestler as well. And is very active on Twitter these days. And, of course, we'll probably be hearing from again from him soon. So the match itself, Coach goes full crazy heel, feuding with over the Jim Ross stuff. And that's gone now. Goldust and Vince... Goldust and Vader are here. Vince, of course, covered for Austin. Street Fight wins the vote very easily. We get, that one over 91% over Verbal Debate for 6, Arm Wrestling for 3. So another one that
I voted for Verbal Debate.
Another one very skewed, obviously, towards pushing them towards Street Fight.
Right.
So Goldust and Vader in the ring to start. Batista knocks them both to the floor, and Batista gets a mega pop, and he's just oozing star potential here.
Mm-hmm.
They recover, get some brief offense in with Coach, including Goldust bashing Batista with a kendo stick. Goldust and Vader pin Batista down. Coach whips him with a belt. Batista breaks free, mashes all through the clotheslines, whips them all with a leather belt. Batista hits a powerbomb on Coach, gets the win. Pretty much a squash, waste of time, zero heat because the angle made no sense. They tried with Coach, and he's a good heel, but the execution's awful. And Vader is gone already after he stumbles and bumbles around. And watching this on the network, I think they cut it out. I remember in this match, didn't he like fall down again, or he botched a spine buster or something? I swear they cut it out.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think so,
I think it's because he drops an F-bomb. That might be why it's gone.
I need to pull out a tape. I need to pull out my actual tape and see again. Because I could have swore he botched something again here. But so I don't know. What do you guys think of this whole mess?
They should have just taken it off the show, honestly.
It really was. It was weird.
They should have just taken it off the show. Yeah. It made no sense whatsoever.
Didn't give – it made Batista – didn't do him any favors whatsoever. He looks good with the belt, but he didn't have the charisma to sell this piece of garbage. I don't know that anybody could have. It was really a CF, a cluster. Did you see the sign in the crowd that said Austin flaked again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty good. Coach was a star on the rise. He had a lot to work with as far as he's a smart guy. He's killing it on ESPN. But, man, this was a really, really stinky time for wrestling, at least this particular angle. Did not like it all. I didn't have much memory of it, honestly. This is so random. Well, it really is.
Even go to that backstage promo where he basically was just doing a Rock impression. It was so strange. he kind of dressed like the Rock and stuff. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Just I don't know. Did they explain why he's like, you know what? There's guys on the roster, but I'll bring in Goldust.
No,
you know,
made no like, sense. Just, yeah.
None at all.
So, yeah, Goldust made zero sense at all.
They should have had Goldust, Vader, and Mankind be the legends that could have teamed with Eugene that you could vote for. You know, that'd actually be pretty cool. But
that would have been very cool. The vote would have been a lot more even, I think, too.
Yeah.
You know?
But
it reminded me of when they brought in
was it JBL brought in Gangrel and Viscera to fight with Undertaker? Remember,
like during their feud,
random two guys out there. Or at least maybe just have Vader come out and just do like Vader Batista. You know what I mean? Like, why not just do that?
Sure. Yeah. You know, the thing is, you have to wonder, like, I mean, Austin says he doesn't remember, but, I mean, there's no way they would have wanted Steve Austin to lose to the coach, right? I mean, Goldust as his side.
But a thing that makes no sense to me is I thought that Vince was getting rid of JR anyway, so I don't understand the eventual return. I mean
– Well, I think that's what the hint is, that Austin kind of saw the writing that – they're not really going to – they're not going to give the win back. They're not going to break – you know, it's going to be a while, so I'm going to lose, and then what, you know? Yeah, I don't think he would have lost clean either, but they could have done something screw or, like, Vader or Goldust, like, holds his feet down. You know, I mean, they probably would have been – or maybe it's a DQ. You know, maybe Austin would have got DQ'd, and that would have caught – I don't know. I'm sure it was something stupid if Austin walked out at the time.
It's amazing how much better Goldust looks now than he did then.
So there you go. Batista wins, a complete and utter mess. And, I mean, guys, five matches in, and this show just sucks.
I think the most shocking thing so far tonight is just reading the recap is I had no clue Vader was ever in TNA back then.
I think it was very brief. I think it was like an appearance.
It had to be like maybe one or two times.
Yeah, those first 4 years that TNA, like first 3 years of TNA, everybody went in for like a month, you know, and then they realized, well, this blows, and then they leave. You know?
Well, he was just on TNA like last year, too.
He was,
if you remember. Yeah, he had a match against, what's the guy's name? Charlotte's husband.
Brom.
He had a match
with Bram. Guy from The Ascension, originally in The Ascension.
Yeah.
Scott, well, you can check the poster on your wall, Scott. But I was psyched to see Vader back because I was such a Vader fan. But then when he fell on his ass, the magic was pretty much out of the. It's like he's so cursed with WWF. You know what I mean? Like, like he's this monster, and then '98 he looks like a goof, and then here he comes back, and he's kind of excited, and then he falls off the apron in his first night. You know, this is like. I remember watching.
And it was like one of those like wobbly falls too, like his arms go flailing around and stuff. You know,
I watched that GIF so many times at that time, just like over and over, just him falling, just tears in my eyes watching this guy flop around like a jackass. But
Leon, you're just not a WWF guy.
you can't even stand up. disappointing overall. And Batista to me, even at this point, still looks like the bigger star. You know, and the biggest selling point of that is how above all this he felt. Like, he felt like Austin level, like, above this shit. You know what I mean? Like, he comes out most through and leaves. Yeah. Like, he felt like he was just this guy toying with these clowns out there. So he didn't feel like he fit in with them at all, which to me is a good thing.
Right, and that's probably the smartest way to do it is, like, don't drag it out. It was, like, 4 minutes.
Right.
They blew through. Go in there. Yeah.
Buried it. And I want to talk more about Batista at the end when we talk about, you know, those two guys, him and Cena. We'll talk about that at the end. Still, who belongs where. But all right, Scott, what do we got next?
Next up, we have the Jerry Lawler favorite match of the night, the Fulfill Your Fantasy Battle Royal for the WWE Women's Championship. There are, let's see, 1, 2, 6 participants. Of course, your champion is still Trish Stratus. Ashley, Victoria, Maria, Candice, and this newcomer to the scene, JR. We have a debut here. Tell us about her.
Mickie James began her career on the indie circuit under the name Alexis Lurie. She would hook up with TNA in 2002, remain there for a year. In 2003, signed a developmental deal, was assigned to OVW. 2005, she changed her name to her real name of Mickie James, was called up to TV shortly after. She would debut on the 10-10 Raw, proclaimed herself to be Trish Stratus' biggest fan. They would team up on Raw, and to this point, her fandom was quite innocent. Mm-hmm. One of the few times I think a wrestler changed from a worked name to a real name, right? I mean, in the WWF world anyway. Like, it's odd that she ditched her fake name and just decided to go with her real name. And the main event hashtag, yes, Jordan, still in place here. big excuse here for Lawler to just straight up, you know, perv like he's just
straight
on
up
Twitter hitting up models. Yes, yeah. I mean, just, you know, sickening. Mickey, a good addition to the roster, looking very hot and very bosomy. Maria looking very good as well. Trish smoking as always. Everyone pairs off and brawls with the focus on Trish and Victoria. Mickey helps Trish to push the storyline along. They dump out Maria, and I kind of like the mix of divas at this point. I think it's a time period that gets overlooked when you look at the depth of the division, but they have a blend of, like, they're all pretty good-looking, and, you know, a bunch of them are talented. Maybe not all of them, but the ones that aren't are pretty good looking. It was a solid mix of, you know, hotness and working ability. So I didn't mind what they had here. Ashley knocks out Candice after a little battle on the apron. Victoria and Trish still battling. Victoria rocks her with a stiff knee and a tilt-a-whirl. Victoria sends Ashley to the floor, and you pretty much leave your best talent in the ring here for the final four. Victoria hits a tilt-a-whirl on Mickey, but Trish comes firing back at Victoria. Victoria almost gets Trish out, but Mickey makes a save again. And the match got pretty solid when it gets down to these three, Victoria, Trish, and Mickey, where she almost dumps them, but Mickey makes another save and then sacrifices herself as she pulls Victoria out and goes to the floor with her to give Trish the win. I thought it was a good finish. I thought the final few minutes were pretty good. They push along the main storyline. Mickey marks out post-match, and Trish kind of looks annoyed because Mickey keeps cutting in, putting her over. And finally, many of the women looked very hot on this show, on this night. Mm. But I think this is actually, to this point, probably the second best match on the show.
Oh, there's no doubt. No doubt about it.
And it's a women's battle royal.
Yes, both for aesthetic purposes and...
But even, so to even take that out, like, I'm not even saying that from like a pervy point of view. From actual like working ability and the structure of the match, to me this was second best so far after the opening tag.
And Victoria totally no-sold the stipulation. She's wearing just a regular ring gear.
Yeah, she didn't give a shit.
Yeah, she was like the Lady Edge. yeah, I mean, it was Lady Edge. Yeah, it was pretty good considering what we've had the last like four matches. Everybody
Trish was so good. Trish was great, man.
Yeah, she really was. She really was. Now she was back out. And you know what's funny? You know, she was a good baby face, but she was almost too milquetoasty. Even now that she's no longer the heel, she still kind of carries herself like one, even though she's not. And I think that made her even hotter, you know?
That like she was when now, she won?
Yeah, like she just had that, like, she still looked like that 04 hot bitch look. Even though she wasn't anymore, you know, and I think that just added to why she was so great at that time. And we're really getting into like the wheelhouse of her legacy right here in 2005-06. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Trish Stratus retains her women's championship with a win in the Battle Royal.
Yeah, we'll be talking a lot about her and Mickey as we go along.
Yes, yes. That lasts for quite a while. All right, next up, our next title match of the evening. For so long, you and me been finding each other for so long. In his first title defense, since defeating the fading, it seems like the fading Carlito at somebody's trying to keep beat.
It's not me, sir.
We got the beat. Of course, Nate won the title at Unforgiven. But as we talked about JR at Homecoming, things took a very dark turn indeed.
Time to play the game! It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Ha!
if she could tell I'm home right now.
Boy, Brad's really going to hate these next two songs. And so, you know what's funny, JR, is that last song doesn't work here because love did not keep them together.
Well, it's not about them. It's about you.
Well, for me, it's even worse. But go ahead.
All right, well, before we get to the build, Todd Weber has to go. we hit up all his final moments with that. But he has a gig to play. So, Todd, you want to just take a moment? You want to say anything before you go? You got anything to talk about?
Well, you know, this. I wish I could stick around and listen to Scott be very, very conflicted during this next portion of the show. I can't wait to listen to it, and thank you for having me on. And let's do another 5 years, if not more, of this show, guys. Let's keep this going. Place to Be Nation shall live forever.
Hopefully you win the contest at episode 450 for the funniest yes. moment. So start going through and figuring it out.
Okay. Yeah, I think I just heard one. I think I have to remember the Scott Criscolo Triple H Mega Mix.
That's well, a set for
tonight.
There's
like 800 of those. So
that's yeah. Todd's set list for tonight is all that's those right, songs.
Yes. I will be doing To Become One tonight. Yes. <That's
very good. laughs> Yeah, excellent. Yeah. You better play My Boyfriend's Back too. Fit perfectly with your motif.
All right. Awesome. Todd. We'll see you in Dallas, sir.
See you guys.
Talk to you soon, T-Web.
Take all care. Right.
That was good to talk to T-Web. Been a while since you've been on.
Yeah, now the dead weight's gone, we can move on with this show.
I guess I'll sign off.
That was the other guy. Wrong bald guy.
So it's great to have Todd with us, of course. So yep. We talked about the big return from Triple H on the homecoming, and we beat the shit out of Ric Flair. Not pleased at how Flair had allowed himself to be disrespected by Carlito, reveled in mediocrity by celebrating a mere IC title win. So, you know, really putting over the titles. Talks about how he saved Flair 4 years ago, resurrected his career, let him stand in his shadow, and all of that nonsense. So he decided to teach him a lesson, put him out of his misery. On 10/17, Flair cut a crazed and passionate promo that ended with him chasing Hunter off with a baseball bat. A week later, the two men would have another brawl that was triggered when Flair jumped Hunter on the entrance ramp. After they were pulled apart, Flair begged the fans to vote for a cage match at the pay-per-view. The next week, the verbal jousting continued, as did Flair stumping for the cage. Very similar to last year, if you remember, where he begged for the cage against Randy Orton. Or at least it was Orton begging for him. Either way, they really pushed the cage part of it two straight years. And the cage does win here in the voting with 83% to 13% for submission. And I mean, this is just guaranteeing. The polls here are so goofy. 4% for a regular match. Like,
I know.
time to hang up the voting if these are going to be the choices. But
right.
Crowd super hot for Flair. We get a chop battle to start. Lots of force and energy. Triple H takes control first, uses a knee lift and a spine buster, then runs Flair to the steel to generate some blood. Vintage Flair blade job just splatters and flows immediately. Hunter drags and grates Flair across the cage, and the blood starts getting crazy, just covering Flair's face. Hunter punishes the head and face, stiff knee to the head. Hunter starts to escape, but Flair stops him and wins a chop battle on the top rope. Both end up crotched on the rope. Hunter grabs a chain, but Flair gets a desperation boot to the chin. Flair goes to the figure four, but Hunter just decks him with a chain for a near fall, and I thought it was a good spot. Hunter starts to bash Flair with a chain punches. Hunter slowly picks Flair apart with knee drops and chain punches and eventually a figure four. Flair hangs on and eventually reverses it as the crowd is just willing him through it. Flair's blood is fucking disgusting at this point, covering his whole head in his stringy hair. Hunter hits a cage and gets sliced open too. Flair makes a comeback, targeting the cut. Flair gets a big suplex and drops a knee of his own, and now Hunter's got disgusting bleeding going on. Very old-school, hate-filled blood feud here. Flair turns his attention to the knee and punishes it. Styles plays up the old torn quad, which was a nice touch. Flair hooks the figure four, and crazy sight, his blood is just flowing everywhere from both guys. Flair flips off Hunter and snaps on the hold. Hunter breaks free. Both men are really hurting. Flair goes right back to the knee and tries to escape, but Hunter saves. Hunter makes a save, and Flair comes back with an axe blow from the top rope. Flair drills a deliberate low blow and almost crawls out, but he gets caught. Flair pulls a chair back into the ring. Hunter blocks the chair and stomps on Flair's hand. Flair gets a testicular claw to block a chair shot and really wrenches like crazy as Hunter screams and Flair chops as well. And Scott was super jealous at that point. Hunter breaks free, goes to the pedigree, but Flair backdrops him on a chair. Flair bashes Hunter in the face with the chair three times and escapes for the unlikely win. A pure old-school bloodbath with hate, vicious weapon shots, a rare Hunter weapons brawl that didn't feel forced or too long over the top. It was a nice break from some of those of Michaels we saw. Everything flows. It all made sense. And question for you guys, too, is this the bloodiest match in WWE history in your eyes? It's got to be up there. I can't think of one where two guys bled this much, at least in the modern era. I can't speak for, like, pre-85, but... like post Mania 1, is there one where both guys bled like this?
I don't know. Hunter and Steve at No Way Out 01? Maybe that one wasn't even that bloody.
I don't think it was this one.
Because Austin was never a bleeder.
Right. These guys were covered and dripping.
I mean, the Eddie match with JBL comes to mind, but that's only one guy.
That's just him. Right. You know, he bleeds enough for both of them in that
JBL
match.
Well, JBL did bleed in that match, but yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, that might be the closest.
Or maybe Vince when he like rips his freaking brains out at Vengeance 03 gets that out. Jeez, he was a disaster in that one. But when you're talking about two guys who equally are just gushing like crazy, I don't think there's many.
Flair looked so gross at one point. It was like, you know how like your kid gets like a Kool-Aid mustache? Like his whole head.
Kool-Aid face.
Yeah. It looked like he buried his whole head like in a vat. Like it was like all dried and just stained. Like his whole head was like stained red. Near the end of the match. It was disgusting. Yeah. And great.
It was great. It was a really good match. And, I mean, Hunter, a little bit of a renaissance in some ways with some of these 05. Like, you know, his last two matches have been pretty great. Like, you know, the Batista Cell and now this. Two really good cage matches and very different styles. Do you guys agree that it was away from the norm of a Triple H weapons match in that it wasn't... you know, it didn't drag on. It wasn't gratuitous.
Yeah, because you're dealing with, for him anyway, he's facing his idol. So it's almost like he let Flair dictate for once. Mm-hmm. And Hunter kind of let Flair kind of let the weapons kind of settle in their certain points rather than Hunter having to do it. And I think Hunter sometimes does go over the top with it. Where Flair kind of like, all right, chair time. All right, we'll get away from the chair now. Let's get back to beating the shit out of each other. All right, cage time. All right, back to beating the shit out of each other. All right, time for this. So I think Hunter actually, I don't want to say Hunter was getting carried, obviously, but I think for once you had a situation where it was Hunter that got to sit back and go with the flow and let Flair do the dictating like he did old school rather than, you know, Hunter trying to do it. That's what I think I think that's why that succeeded, because you had a guy who just, you know, he just knows these matches. It's him, you know, and that's why I think it wasn't gratuitous, because it wasn't Hunter dictating the pace. Mm-hmm. And the storytelling, because Flair's the one that wanted the violence more. I mean, he was the one who was pissed off. So
right, and it kept that same pace basically through the whole match. Like I think if someone was to critique it and say, well, it's kind of a slow moving match, and it was slow, but it was slow intentionally. Like I think one knock on some of Triple H's matches is they seem slow just because, you know, it's like so you can get past the 20-minute mark, you know, and say you had a 20-minute match, whereas this one. It was slow because it fit the point. It fit the story. Yep. It fit what they were going with. And so everything made sense, you know, even at the end where, you know, Triple H is just kind of fighting to prove that he's not everything that Hunter says he is. And by the way, the video package with Hunter's promo, you know, for someone like me who wasn't watching a ton of the time, like I knew everything I needed to know about the match going in.
Yep.
It did a great job there. And so Flair, you know, had to prove that he was still the guy, and he had to resort to just crushing his old pal in the head with a chair. So be it. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought having Flair bleed right away too was smart, because it got them into the, you know, like you said, JD, they didn't take 20 minutes to get to that part. Whereas some of his other matches, it was 20 minutes of bullshit, and then you get into the weapons and the brawling. Here, they just went right, you know, he busted him open, and then he was out to kill him. That was the match. Like, can Ric Flair survive this murderer trying to, you know, end his life?
Yeah, almost like Jason Voorhees stalking him, yeah.
That's what it felt like. I was like, this guy literally wants to kill you, and can this old man survive somehow? And Flair, despite being old, has the cred to be believable enough in this spot, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't look like some old, you know, bum trying to just hang on with Triple H. It's absurd that he wins the match. Like, it's believable because he's Ric Flair.
Right. And it's believable, too, because he doesn't dominate the match. You know, Triple H pretty much is in control for most of it, and Flair gets the right moments and, you know, doesn't have these, like, flurries of massive offense where he's in control for most of the time, but he just breaks him down where he needs to, you know? Even like, the part you mentioned, I think it was really smart where he started punching him right in the quad.
Right.
You know, like okay, I'm not stronger than this guy, but here's his weak spot, so that's what I got to go for.
And this is good stuff. And it might be tough just on the spot, but to this point, I think it's easily Flair's best WWE match, right?
Since coming back,
no, not from all time. I mean, I don't think it's... Well,
yeah, probably.
It might be up. Well, I mean, if you count the Rumble, 92 Rumble, I guess, no. But, you know, best singles match?
Do you compare this with him and Savage at 8?
In different ways, yeah. I'd say rivals it. It's debatable.
Mm. I think the reason it's... You know, you got to really sit and think about that comparison as you're dealing with two different Flairs. Because actually, Savage is the one at 8 that's in Flair's spot here.
Right.
Savage was the crazed one, you know, with the pictures of Elizabeth and everything, and the horse and the feeding strawberries and everything. And now Flair's the one that's all crazed. So it's interesting dichotomy between those two matches because Flair is on both ends of the psychology spectrum. But it's interesting. I don't think there's really anything other than that, you know?
The only other match I would maybe think, and it's totally different style, and it's more that it's more of a fun match, is Evolution against Rock and Sock.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
I mean, that's probably not as good of a match just in terms of, like, match quality, but just a lot of fun.
Right.
You know, ton of fun. And that's really not because of Flair, though. I mean, Flair was a star there, though. But you had the Foley and Orton stuff and Rock, of course, coming back. And
right.
Totally different reasons, but still awesome.
So there you go. Ric Flair retains, which people forget, because I think people forget this is actually a title match.
The Intercontinental title.
Yeah. Which I find kind of a hypocrisy, because Hunter's pissing and moaning that that Flair was reveling in mediocrity, yet he wants to be the Intercontinental champion.
Yeah, make it a title match.
Make it a title match, because I can make mediocrity look better.
It's funny, too, because when you think of the great IC title matches in history, this one never comes up, but it's up there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's not far off from the greats, Bret Perfect, Bulldog Bret. You know, like some of those. Like, I mean, if you, I don't know where you rated this, Jordan, but I mean, it's at least 4.25, 4.5 ish, right? I mean, around there. So,
oh yeah,
it's probably in line with some of those great IC title matches.
Yeah. I think this one probably does suffer to people because it's got Triple H in 2005, and people are going to judge it more harshly than they would something else.
Or they just
which isn't really fair to the
match. Or they just
forget
that's
true,
too.
That's true, too.
But
Does Flair even have the belt when he comes out?
Yes.
Did he? Okay. Yeah. I don't remember. I remember the swank pink robe, but...
Yes. No, he had the robe was awesome, but he did have the belt because he grabbed it at the end of the match, I remember. So.
Cool.
So there you go. Ric Flair retains the Intercontinental Championship. This feud, far from over.
Definitely needed it for this show right now.
Yeah, that was a save.
Save the show. Yeah,
save the show. And this one does a pretty good job as well. Our final match of the evening. Obviously, the controversy with Raw and everything, but it comes down to this: the WWE Championship Triple Threat. Come on, that's actually a relatively that one's moderately modern day compared to what I usually play. Kesha. Speaking of somebody you thought was dead who crushed OxyContin all the time. anyway, John Cena, of course, still your WWE champion, but your boy JR not through wanting the gold. How did we get here?
Following Unforgiven, Eric Bischoff came out with the WWE Championship, was about to hand it over to Kurt Angle based on the DQ finish the night before. Just when he was about to do that, Vince McMahon came out and put an end to that idea, said John Cena was still champion and Bischoff would have to face Cena the next week. In 2 weeks' time, rather. In the next week, Vince announced that Angle and Shawn Michaels would score off in a handicap match the following week, with the winner earning a title shot. The Iron Man would end in a tie. I don't know why it's handicapped there. It was an Iron Man. Leaving things unresolved. Later in the night, Cena defeated Bischoff despite the interference from Angle. On 10-17, Vince told Eric that he wanted to see a triple threat for the title at the pay-per-view, and the three men involved would be determined in qualifying matches throughout the evening. Big Show, Shawn Michaels, and Kane won their matches and were involved in the fan vote to compete against Cena and Angle. The next week, Michaels won a triple threat between the three men, and later in the show, Angle defeated Cena in a non-title match when Bischoff forced Cena's hand to tap out in an ankle lock. On 10-31, Cena defeated Michaels by DQ thanks to Angle interfering, and of course, Michaels won that vote, like we mentioned earlier. Not a surprise, as Angle and Bischoff still trying to get that belt off of Cena, going full-on Bischoff, going full-on Austin McMahon, I should say, where Bischoff's just off the rails completely, out of control. Michaels-Angle feud is reborn here yet again. Well, a little surprised they would put Michaels anywhere near this out of fear for siphoning off Cena's cheers. Are you guys surprised as well that they didn't try and get Michaels out of this?
Mm-hmm. Extremely. Mm-hmm. By the way, JR, I think the handicap thing's just a mistake. Because
yeah.
I think what they're talking about is the...
Yeah, it was the Iron Man.
The actual Iron Man from Homecoming. Which I don't remember them... Did they mention that was the number one contenders?
I don't remember them saying it, but...
I don't remember them saying it. When we talk... I don't remember us whether we mentioned it on that vault, but I don't think they even mentioned it. So... I was flabbergasted that they would put Shawn in this situation. I know it was kind of to give a little extra juice for Kurt, but we've talked about this extensively. It's been a year-long discussion for you and I, JR, about Cena and the move and everything. So bad enough that a lot of the male fans dig Kurt anyway, but now you put Shawn in it, you might as well have Cena turn heel. I mean, it was mind-boggling, yeah.
So Angle has some pretty cool black tights on, I thought, here. Cena lands an early shot. Angle grinds him down, then drills Michaels to the floor. Cena gets a fisherman suplex for a near fall that gets broken up by Michaels. All three start trading strikes and covers before Angle gets dumped outside. Michaels works over Cena. Angle hits Germans in a belly-to-belly on both the big pops. Michaels reverses an Angle slam to a sunset flip, but Angle hooks on an ankle lock, and Michaels kicks free. Cena grabs an FU, but Angle slips free, and the crowd is booing anytime Cena gets close on near falls. Michaels and Angle viciously double-team Cena to a big pop. They look to completely eliminate him, as they had discussed. They take him outside and smash him through the announce table with a double reverse suplex. Back inside, Michaels grabs a near fall, but Angle elbows him in the grill. Angle goes to work. Takes Michaels down and gets a tight body scissors while smashing his forearm into his face. Michaels furiously punches his way out of the hole. The Styles notes that Cena has been given time to recover during that time. Angle lands an overhead belly-to-belly, and the crowd seems pretty split now between Angle and Michaels. Michaels blocks a super belly-to-belly, but struggles, and Angle recovers for a super Angle slam for a two count. Cena comes back in and cleans house, and the crowd's just booing him all left and right. Cena drops Michaels with a spinning slam, but Angle trips him up and doing a five-knuckle shuffle, chucks him into the crowd. Michaels launches into Angle with a crossbody on the floor, to the floor. Back in, Michaels hits a flying forearm and starts to heat up. Hits Angle with his usual spots until Cena makes it back inside. Angle hits Michaels sends him to the floor with an overhead belly-to-belly over the top. Cena hits a spinning slam and the five-knuckle shuffle. The crowd's pretty pissed at this point. Angle reverses an FU and gets an ankle lock to a huge pop. Cena tries to wriggle free, but he can't break out of it, and it's a really good spot because the crowd is dying, diving into the big time. Angle drops into the heel hook, and Cena's about to tap, but Michaels breaks the hold with an elbow off the top. Michaels hits sweet chin music on Angle, but then turns around and walks into an FU for the finish. Really fun match. The last 5 minutes or so were really good. I would have maybe pulled the trigger here, though. I think I would have had Angle beat Michaels to win the belt and then reset with Cena and let him kind of get the crowd back behind him. Impressive showing by all three. It was well worked. Cena survives. And the show as a whole, obviously, shaky undercard. These two matches have saved it a bit. But what do you guys think of the finish here? Would you have had, would you have looked to have Cena drop it, or would you have gone a different direction?
Yes. Definitely. If you were going to have, I mean, if they had any thought whatsoever that Cena was in deep shit right now, I'd have done this. Because, I mean, it was fine that Cena was champion and everything. And, okay, so the crowd's getting a little
We're getting a little wary here. You know, there's two guys in this match that the fans like. Whether he's a heel or not is irrelevant. Sean wouldn't have given a damn to eat the pin. So just have Sean.
Right,
you know,
he did anyways.
Yeah, so Sean. But exactly. So you might as well have Kurt do it and then let Kurt be champion, you know, and hold it till, I don't know if you hold it till Mania, maybe hold it till the Rumble or whatever.
Yeah, this is Cena kind of reset himself a little bit. Like, let him just get his feet back under him. And, you know, the Michaels thing is interesting here too, because they keep Angle, you know, they don't have him take another loss like he did already at Unforgiven. So they kind of keep him, that you can tell they're trying to keep him strong so he can challenge again soon. But, I don't know. I go back and forth on the Cena thing. Like, I really feel like it probably was a good time to pull the trigger, but then on the other hand, if they are building him to be the man, you know, do you really want to take the belt off him? I don't know. JD, what do you think? What would you have done there?
I mean, it's not like he just got the belt. He's had it since WrestleMania.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's a decent, I mean, we're 6 months by now, 7 months into the reign. So, and I think you could sell it pretty easily that he lost, he didn't lose his belt if you have Angle beat Shawn for it. And then, knowing what did happen, you could have him win it back in the chamber in January and have it be a short-lived celebration and still do what they did.
Right.
You know?
You could play it up that Bischoff screwed him. I mean, if you really want to do the McMahon-Austin, I mean, this is around when, you know, McMahon screwed the belt off of Austin, and he had had it pretty much since Mania. So, I mean, you're pretty much following the template if you want.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think if we're talking April, you know, maybe even May, then it's like, well, that's pretty soon.
Right.
But I mean, by this point, he'd been champ for 6 months. I mean, that's a pretty good reign, especially in 2005, where they're still coming out of the Attitude Era a little bit. 6 months probably seemed like an eternity
exactly.
to a lot of fans.
That's
you know?
A good point.
Whereas
yep.
now, I mean, 6 months is pretty standard. But, you know, back then, we were seeing title change.
And you could say the same thing. Right. And you could say the same thing about Batista, but mm-hmm. there's a difference. Batista's over.
Right. And, you know? and who's a better option than Batista for them right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he's on the show that has no bad guys right now. So,
and I don't really think it hurts John Cena to lose the title to Kurt Angle. You know, it's not like Kurt Angle.
No, absolutely not.
Especially if Michaels takes the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Or even if you had Shawn maybe super kick Kurt, maybe if Shawn have a little, you know, quickie,
yeah, just
quickie
kinda,
series.
No,
I think then have Kurt win it from him.
No. Now you're good. I think it's just. I don't think Michaels needed the bell. I think it's just getting too deep in the weeds. Like, Bischoff, Angle wins because Bischoff screwed Cena. Like, that's a simple story if you're going to do it. You don't need to. I think you don't need to get convoluted with the other stuff.
That would help Bischoff, too, who kind of looked like a chump this show, you know?
So looking at it still, you know, Batista to me, at this point, still feels like the guy that should have stayed on Raw. He had the better look. He had the better, I thought, connection to the crowd. He felt like a bigger star. Cena just, you know, you can see it in him, but you still feel like he's working his way to it. So, mm-hmm. you know, looking back to June, I think I would have still had Batista hang on Raw and let Cena build himself up on SmackDown.
And even hearing the promos, like, you know, hearing it when I was watching it again today, the, I never quit. Now it's actually starting to sound forced.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When he keeps saying, I never quit. I'm like, yeah, we get it. You know, now it's like already it's starting to sound tired.
That's a veteran promo, not a first title reign.
Yeah,
promo,
not a new guy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It just it already sounds tired, you know.
And they could have had Batista. I mean, when you look at it on paper, I know they saw that Cena maybe had the long-term future, but isn't that more of a reason to run with Batista on your main show now that
sure.
get out of it while you can before he gets old and you have plenty
right.
of time with Cena?
Right.
I know in their minds that SmackDown, especially at this time, more than any, was, you know, 1A at least. I mean, they're really mm-hmm. pushing it hard. So maybe they thought Batista going there helped SmackDown, but I don't know. It's just looking at things the way we were watching it, I think Batista, to me, still comes off as the bigger deal, and he has since WrestleMania, to me.
Mm. I think so, too.
I agree. And it's almost like, you know, and if you're Cena, I don't know if he was thinking this, but if you're Cena, you're also thinking, wow, did they really have no faith in me? They even had to stick Batista on this show, even for a throwaway piece of shit like an hour ago?
Yeah. See, I can't blame him for that, though. That, to me, that's not...
Yeah, I think that's just like, okay, we've promised
Steve
Austin.
I know that. I know that. But I'm saying – no, I know that. But I'm even saying like Cena could still be like, well, like, you know, they could have done something else. They had to bring him. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I mean, I might be overthinking it. But
yeah, I think it's overthinking. I think it's a, hey, guys, we're we're really stuck. We need to, we need someone to replace freaking Stone Cold, you know? Like, I know, I don't think Cena's sitting there thinking, oh, they could have used me or something. I don't think that.
Because he's got to have something in his head. I mean, if he's got, you know, if he's human, he's got to be thinking, you know, am I failing? What am I doing wrong?
No,
why are
not,
they?
I don't agree with that at all. Because what? Because of the crowd reaction?
Well, he eventually adapted to it.
I mean, from a booking standpoint, they've done nothing to him to make him think that they should favor Batista over him. If anything, it should be the opposite. He's got every gift over Batista.
Right, and something's wrong. Is what I'm saying. There's what's the equation? What's in the equation that's not working? Why is he getting booed then? You know
sure.
what I mean? Like, that's all I'm saying. I mean, any
I
wouldn't
look
guy
at it in any
that.
Way that he has to think like Batista's coming to save him, though. I don't think that.
No. I'm talking about a completely different topic. We're off.
Kind of just second guessing. You know, like, okay, why am I not connecting?
Yeah. Why?
The way
why
it's
is,
supposed to be.
Why is it? Why do I feel like they pretty much just want Sean and Kurt here, and I could leave?
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it's you know. That's no, I'm off the Batista thing. You're right about that point.
And I'll give them credit. I mean, they were going balls to the wall with Cena. They were going all out. You know, mm-hmm. they were letting him, you know, go out there, hang in these matches, fight these guys, and you know, like we see nowadays too. In some ways, they were just going with it, you know, regardless of the crowd reaction. They were pushing forward, and looking at where things end up. I mean, it's hard to second guess because of the run he would have, but
right.
at times you wonder if they did pull back just a little bit in those early days, could things have been different eventually? Like, did they go too hard, too fast with the new top face of the company, and that's it at this point? Like, was this a good time to maybe mix it up a little bit? But we'll see as we move along.
Exactly. Sure.
Yeah. So pretty, pretty crappy show.
Yeah.
Buoyed by the two last matches. How much of these?
Definitely.
How much would you guys weigh these two matches in saving the show?
Heavily.
if these
two matches are half what they ended up being, we're looking at like a D minus.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say an F because there's not many King of the Ring 95s. But I mean, this is easily I gave it a C, and I'd still give it a C because those two matches are both A pluses. You know, or A's, and the rest of the show is pretty much a D minus. I mean, it's awful. That four match stretch with all those fat legends and fat Foley and just garbage, no, you know, and just Coach and fat V. There's a lot of girth in that four match stretch there, and it's not.
But I think that's what makes it seem so bad is that it's all right in a row,
yeah,
right after
just,
one another.
Yeah, and the legends thing, I agree with you, JR, what you said earlier about how the legends thing was still kind of new and special, but it just felt like, I don't know, that they were all just so bad. Let's, you know, it's
yeah,
like
it's tough though. I mean, you go look at it at that time, even though they were kind of bad, it was still kind of cool at the time.
Oh no, yeah, it was.
Looking
yeah.
back now, it's been rammed down our throat so much over the last 10 years that it's kind of like, all
right,
right. whatever.
And it's always the same legends, yeah.
right. But at the time, seeing like Vader and Doug, like that was kind of cool. But yeah, when you look at the card, the layout is just they start kind of hot and then it's dip hard. Mm-hmm. Until the Hot Women come out and then the two great matches. And I think the show often gets overlooked. I think most of 05 has gotten overlooked in many ways. You know, watching these back, it's better than I remembered. Mm. This show overall was not. But these last two matches, I feel like maybe got forgotten a bit. I feel like the Flair Triple H matches, this one and the one we'll talk about in a couple weeks, Scott, I feel like they get blended together in people's heads to maybe where they forget which is the better one and on which show which happened.
Right.
So.
Right.
You know, maybe that's part of the reason it gets forgotten, too. They just remember, oh, yeah, they had two really good matches. And you kind of forget that this one was, like, as good as it was.
Exactly. And we haven't had a show. I mean, do we have any in 04? I mean, I don't think we've had a show this bad in a while. We've had some boring shows. Like, oh, you know, this show's not bad, but it's.
I don't know.
But
like
we haven't
Bash
had
show four was pretty bad.
Yeah, probably. All right, so it's been a little over a year then since we've had like a legitimately awful show.
I don't remember Armageddon 04. I feel like that was pretty bad too.
Yeah, probably. It pretty much. And those two. Well, the Bash had Eddie and JBL, which wasn't too bad. But I mean, like, at least we had these two last matches to give us some
right.
kind.
This one ends well, which yeah. I think helps a lot when you're mm-hmm. thinking about how a show was. Is did it end fine? And you know, ends the last basically last 45 minutes are all.
I was
going to
say
really
it's
worth
a
watching.
Big chunk of the show. Yeah.
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 All right.
So there you go.
Yep.
There's a Taboo Tuesday. So if you
want to watch the whole thing, God bless you, but at least watch the last two matches. Yes.
Thank goodness for the buttons on the network.
Yes.
You can get right to where you want to go. Yeah.
All right, that'll do it. So, JD, thank you for joining us to celebrate here our fifth birthday. We'll have you back in another 5 years. That'll be fun.
All right.
Scott, happy birthday.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Happy anniversary, I guess.
Whatever. Yes.
However you want to say it.
Yep.
So thank you. Schedule a little jumbled coming up, so we're not going to lay anything out. There's going to be stuff coming at you randomly from us. We will be doing our usual March Madness show, though. I can tell you that. That's coming in a few weeks. We got Survivor Series is our next vault, but we'll see what else comes up in between as we get close into 400. So for JD, for Todd, for Scott and myself, I want to thank you all for your loyalty over the last 5 years. Thank you so much for helping us build into what this has all become. We hope you continue to listen. We hope to be going in another 5 years. Episode 1,000 will be creeping up at some point. But thank you all, as always, for listening, and we look forward to reaching out. If you have feedback or anything about the show, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, we're all over the place on social media. Just reach out. We're all very accessible. We'll get back to you as quick as we can. So for the crew, I'm Justin. We are out. Just make sure you continue to have the time of your lives.
Amen.
Come on.
Come on. So we take each other's hand, because we seem to understand the agility.
It's the truth, and I hope it.